Nick DiGilio show here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here until 4 a.m. Coming up a little bit later on, Marnie Shore is going to join us. She's the editor-in-chief of The Takeout, which is this great internet website that talks about food and does articles and things like that. And we've done some fun taste tests in the past with Marnie. And we're going to do another one about tasting the best microwave popcorn. We're going to judge the taste test of microwave popcorn. Lots of other food topics to talk about. We do classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can watch on Antenna TV. Tonight we're going to play back an appearance by Richard Pryor on The Tonight Show. It's hard to believe, but March 5th, which it will be in about 49 minutes... March 5th is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death. I can't believe it's been 38 years. And so we're going to pay tribute to John Belushi. I was still a massive fan of John Belushi's, and his death hit me real hard. I was about 16 or 17 when it happened, and was a massive fan of SNL, massive fan of John Belushi. And so we're going to pay tribute to John Belushi on the anniversary of his death, if you can believe it's been 38 years. So that's some of the stuff that's coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page. And that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. He's with us every couple of weeks to talk TV. Dan, how are you?
I'm okay. How you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. Can you believe it's been 38 years since Belushi passed away?
Every once in a while, you sort of pause and think, what would his career be today? What would the direction have been that he would have taken? I don't know, would he have sort of the Bill Murray career where he was nominated for a couple Oscars and people revered him in that way? Would he have just sort of become more like Dan Aykroyd and not necessarily gone down as productive a path? Dan Aykroyd was nominated for an Oscar, too.
He was, yeah.
I think about that periodically whenever I happen upon Animal House on TV or a classic SNL sketch. I think, okay, where would he be 38 years later? What would his career be? And, yeah, it's a tough thing to think about.
It is. And, you know, it was interesting because one of the last movies that he made was this film called Continental Divide, which was a really sweet romantic comedy and not at all like he played like a Mike Royko like reporter who goes up to interview this woman played by Blair Brown who lives in the mountains and they slowly fall in love, and it was so unlike anything that Belushi ever did. And I always thought that was kind of the first step into like broadening his career instead of just doing the wacky comedy that he was known for, the slob kind of comedy that he was known for. And I thought he was really terrific in Continental Divide, and it's all the more disappointing that was one of his last movies.
No, he was a force of nature, and the reality is that when you think of the excesses that those guys had and the lives that they lived, you know, who knows what was going to happen if he'd made it another year or 2 years or anything. I mean, there's just no way of knowing. And yeah. I guess that's the sort of sad mystery of it all is it could have been infinite or it could have been finite. And we just never got the chance to find out.
Exactly. All right. Dan Feinberg is from The Hollywood Reporter, and we talk television. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Lots of TV to talk about. There always is.
I tried to make it Sunday, but I got so damn depressed that I set my sights on Monday, and I got myself undressed. I ain't ready for the altar, but I do agree there's times when a woman sure can be a friend of mine. Will I keep on
Nick DiGilio show continues here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us every couple of weeks. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. Tomorrow night, Dan, season 4 of Better Things premieres, and we all, you know how we feel about that show. And and have you seen the whole season?
I have seen 6 episodes, which feels like a good head start on the season. I don't remember if this is a 10-episode or 12-episode season. Last season was 12 for some reason, but I've seen 6 episodes, and guess what? It's a good show.
No!
It continues to be a good show. It continues to be a show that just dazzles with little moments and occasionally surprises you with big moments and sometimes makes you laugh hard and sometimes makes you feel emotional. And once again, Pamela Adlon directing every episode, and she is just a maestro. She is so good. And yeah, this is just a great show, and I know that some people love it. I feel like it could definitely stand to have a little bit more buzz around it. So I feel like we definitely do our job every spring to make sure that at least within our little sphere, people know to talk about
it. Well, for people who might not even know what it is, tell everybody what Better Things is.
It sort of started off as being described as this semi-autobiographical show about Pamela Adlon as an actress raising her 3 daughters on the outskirts of Hollywood and the ups and downs of that. I get the very strong impression that it is barely semi-autobiographical anymore, largely because the 3 actresses who play her daughters have just taken the characters, and the characters have been built around their strengths. And so Mikey Madison, Hannah Alligood, and Olivia Edwards are all just really good young actors. And Pamela Adlon, again, this is another thing about her as a director. You don't get performances like that out of young, inexperienced actors if you aren't doing something very right. And so the show doesn't have big, huge plot lines. It's not a mythology-based show. You really probably could just jump in at the start of season 4, though I don't know why you'd want to do that, because the first 3 seasons are great. But it's really just, it's about parenting. It's about the relationships between mothers and daughters and all of that. And it's just such a good and special show.
It really is. And you mentioned the kids. The kids are so great. And the actress who plays her mother is also fantastic. And Pamela Adlon, she does have, her mom is British, and she does have three daughters. So, you know, she is pulling from her real life, but obviously it's become different than, you know, it's become much more than what it started out as.
Yeah. I get the impression it's sort of thematically pulls from real life more than anything. I've mentioned in the past the podcast I do at THR, TV's Top 5, and we have for next Friday, not this Friday, a really good 30-minute chat with Pamela Adlon, who's just so smart and so enthusiastic about this, and so enthusiastic about the fact that, you know, she didn't get these opportunities for 3 decades in her career, and now suddenly she's in this position where she has the power to direct every episode of an FX TV series, and she is just running with it. Yeah. And it's such a pleasure, and you kind of have to wonder, if someone had given her this opportunity when she was 30, what would she have done? Would she have become Greta Gerwig? Would she have been Olivia Wilde? Or, you know, was this the time in her career when this was supposed to happen, and this is why the show is as good as it is, because she hadn't had this as a microphone, a podium before. So you can look at it either of those 2 ways. Mostly I just enjoy that this is a show that comes back every year. And it's also not one of those shows like, you know, no offense at all to Donald Glover or Atlanta. That is a great show. But it's also a situation where you don't really know when that show is going to come back. It just sort of appears when he's got the time. So far, at least, Better Things has been like clockwork, and it's been like clockwork quality-wise, too. It just chugs along being great TV.
Yeah, it's one of the best shows on TV, and I'm so excited for the premiere tomorrow. It's really great. For people who might not know, Pamela Adlon's been in the business for a really long time, and chugging around doing voice work. She's the voice of Bobby or of Bobby on King of the Hill, for people who might not know. And that's a fantastic character that she plays. And it was just so nice that she finally got this showcase and this opportunity, because I've loved Pamela Adlon since Say Anything. I mean, that's, you know, and I think she's been great in everything that she ever did, and it's just great to watch her soar with this show. It really is.
Totally.
Yep. All right. 312-981-7200. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're talking with Dan Feinberg for our biweekly visit. He's from The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. Follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Okay. What is Dave?
Well, FX has kind of been a little bit quiet for the past couple of months, and I get the feeling some people have noticed. And basically what they've been doing was storing up an arsenal for a spring tidal wave, tsunami, avalanche, whatever you want to call it. So this week, FX has four shows premiering between FX, FXX, and FX on Hulu, which have now become three separate entities that are going to confuse the heck out of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can provide only as much clarity as I can, which is to say that Better Things is on FX, Dave is on FXX, Devs, which I assume we will talk about a little bit down the road.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I figured is on FX on Hulu. And then if you wait till next month, you're going to have Fargo back on FX. You're going to have Mrs. America on FX on Hulu. It's all just a lot of programming,
wow.
And a lot of it is very good. And so, yeah, so, okay, let's go back to your initial question,
yes.
Which was, what is Dave?
Yes.
Some people, the kids, as we say, may know the popular YouTube rapper Little Dicky.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a TV series based upon that character, who was created by Dave Byrd, who stars here and plays Dave Byrd, a middle-class Jewish guy in his low 30s, trying to make it as a YouTube rapper known as Lil Dicky. His gimmick is based around his diminutive and questionable genitals.
Yeah.
And there's an awful lot of humor in that doctor with a particular problem involving his Johnson, and going into rather in-depth and graphic detail about what's happening down there. There are going to be a lot of people who are going to tune this show out so fast, and then there are the people who have already seen the key art, the billboard ads, where the character is coming out of the fly of a pair of boxer briefs, and they're going to go, okay, that's not for me either. And I think that's true. I think that if you hear, okay, it's a show that's based around dick jokes, I can't deal with that.
Wait, Dan, you're going to have to say penis joke.
Oh, okay.
Because I think we had to hit the delay on that. So, you can refer to the characters.
I tried being euphemistic here. I went with Johnson.
Yeah.
Went with genitals. Okay, so now I know what I can't
yes,
say.
Yes.
So, his name is Lil Bleepy. apologies to your genteel listeners.
Okay.
There's an interesting backdrop where it's him trying to make it in the world of hip hop, and he's got these friends who kind of begrudgingly admire what he does, but also aren't really sure what the purpose of his voice is in the hip hop scene, if the world really needs this.
Yeah.
The fifth episode, if people stick with the show, the fifth episode does something that I found truly fascinating, involving a supporting character whose name is Gaeta, who is played by basically a non-actor named Gaeta, who is part of Lil Bleepy's posse, you know, mm-hmm. in real life. That is his thing. And there's an exploration of mental illness in the hip-hop community that actually made me go, whoa, that actually is a thing that the show is trying to do. And it kind of reframes the entire show around the idea of fragile masculinity and how that plays into the world of hip-hop, and how you either have to build yourself up and exaggerate your masculinity, or as Dave's character does here, diminish it and make a joke out of it. The fifth episode caused me to go, maybe there's more happening in this show, but there's just a lot you have to get through to get to it. And it's not going to be for everyone. And anyone who says it's just too much of this, I just couldn't deal with it. The first episode's like 31 minutes without commercials. I don't, you know, like FX sometimes lets people just go on forever. Man, it did not need to be that long.
Yeah. All right. And it premieres on Wednesday.
Yes. Okay. It premieres on Wednesday. Yes.
Wednesday.
Trying to figure out the different days of the week.
Yeah. Well, so it premiered tonight then?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. So the premiere happened tonight, and it's on FXX, and it's called Dave. All right.
And then it will move over onto FX on Hulu tomorrow if anyone wants to catch it there.
And let's not get this confused with the movie with Kevin Kline.
No, let's definitely not get it confused with the movie starring Kevin Kline, which is one of the great political satires and great performances of recent years in comedy.
I totally agree with you. Okay, Dan Feinberg is with us, Hollywood Reporter, TV critic. Follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Lots of TV to talk about. 312-981-7200. The conversation continues here on 720 WGN.
Jocko says yes, and I believe him when we talk about the things I say. She hasn't got the faith or the guts to leave him when they're standing in each other's way. You're tripping back now to places you've been to. You wonder what you're gonna find. You know you've been wrong, but it won't be long before you leave him all far behind. Cause it's the new Mother Nature taking over. It's the new Splendid Lady come to call. It's the new Mother Nature taking over. She's getting us all. She's getting us all.
Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline Studio here until 4 a.m. Marnie Shore of the Takeout website is going to join us to talk a bunch of food-related fun topics, and we're going to do a microwave popcorn taste test. March 5th marks the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, so we're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. And much more here, 312-981-7200. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, is with us, and you can follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, tell me about Queen Sono.
Queen Sono, and I'm going to try to avoid you guys having to bleep me again, is the first originally produced African Netflix production. They've had a number of acquired series from Africa because Netflix likes to bring in the international programming, but this one was produced and filmed in African locations, primarily South Africa. It was created by Kagiso Ladiga, and it's a little bit aliasy. It's an espionage drama about a young woman. Her name is Queen Sono, and her mother was a revolutionary leader around the time of the transition out of apartheid in South Africa, but she was killed in an act of political violence. And so Queen Sono works for a somewhat underground South African intelligence agency, but she has to tell all of her friends and loved ones that she is an art dealer or something. She can't tell anyone. And basically they're trying to get to the bottom of a plot to overthrow not just the South African government, but to destabilize the entire continent to some degree in the name of a European mercenary corporation. So it mirrors basically a 300 or 400 year history of colonialism in Africa. And it's just a really interesting backdrop, and it's a really provocative background concept, and it covers for a lot of the limitations to the show. The lead actress is Pearl Thusi, and she's good, not great. She's got the attitude to play the part, but she's also being asked to do some serious emotional lifting that she's not as good at. And a lot of the cast has similar problems, that they're good in one of the modes, but then when they're asked to do more, they fall apart a little. But they shoot on location all around the African continent, and that is fascinating to see. And it just doesn't feel exactly like a show like an Alias or like a Homeland, even if you can understand how those are the kind of genre efforts that inspire it. It's only six episodes, and they're no longer than 47 minutes. One of them is even 31 minutes. And it's just an interesting take on the espionage thriller genre. It's not perfect. The action scenes are never as good as you want them to be. The stunt scenes are never quite as good as you want them to be. And, you know, whether that has to do with budget, whether it has to do with limitations in the South African film industry, I'm not sure, though South Africa has a lot of production going on it, so I'm not sure that's what it is. I think it really comes down more than anything to budget. So there are times when you're like, man, if Simba would just throw another $5 million at them, this could be something really special. But it's interesting, and it's one of the things that I love most about what Netflix does at this point is all of the international, both acquisitions and originals, that they're bringing in. And Kutsono is just a good example of the kind of TV show that without what Netflix is doing, you would never get a chance to see in this country. You wouldn't get a chance to see these people, hear these stories. There are like 15 different languages that are spoken in this series. Some of them, you know, as quote-unquote basic as Afrikaans, like, okay, I know where that comes from, but there are a lot of regional languages, and if you don't watch it with subtitles, it doesn't necessarily identify which languages are being spoken at a time. I mean, obviously it translates them, but it puts you in a different cultural milieu, and it's very interesting and at times important in that respect. I enjoyed this series, wished it could be a little bit bigger, but I applaud what it's doing and what it represents.
Okay. All right. And that's Kutsono on Netflix. It's streaming now, right? All the episodes?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It premiered last week, and again, only six episodes, so you can definitely sample it. And it's reasonably fun. It's not a show that feels like homework. It really is very Alias-y. It just happens to have a very specifically African and South African context, which you just don't see everywhere.
Okay. Dan Feinberg is with us, Nick DiGilio show here, continuing, and you can follow him at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. You know, talking about Netflix, man, how much content do they have? I mean, it's just, oh my God.
It's endless, and it's endless even when you take into account all of the things that they're losing as everybody else consolidates their studio libraries. So all of the things that were kind of the backbone of Netflix over the years, really and truly, for all that anyone wants to talk about, your Orange is the New Blacks and House of Cards and all of that, you know, repeats of Friends have been the backbone of Netflix. Repeats of The Office have been the backbone. All of the CW repeats that they have. And a lot of that stuff is getting reclaimed as different studios are doing their own thing. As HBO Max acquired Friends, as The Office is going to Peacock, etc. But boy, oh boy, do they just keep churning out stuff. And now they've actually even had a few reality hits. So Love is Blind and The Circle both have really stirred up a lot of conversations. And that had been a thing that Netflix had been struggling with, was actually breaking into the unscripted space. They wanted to be there so badly because reality shows like that are so cheap.
Yeah.
And they can be so valuable to a service. And Netflix couldn't land a successful one. And now Netflix has had two fairly buzzy reality shows in like 2 months. So they're doing well, Netflix is.
Yeah, it really is. And one of my favorite running gags is that you spend more time scrolling through what you want to watch than actually watching.
It's true, and the problem is that I am almost never browsing. Like, there's never really a point in my life where I'm like, oh, I've got, you know, an hour free, what TV should I watch? And even still, like, on a Saturday night where I give up and I'm like, okay, I'm not watching any more of my screeners, I'm going to do whatever, let's see what's on Netflix, you really can't just get sucked down the algorithm wormhole and spend an hour watching the autoplay trailers and just go, I have no clue what this is or what country it's from, but it looks interesting. Sure.
Yeah. Well, it's a whole process in and of itself. You mentioned on Saturday nights, last week's Saturday Night Live, which, by the way, featured one of the best musical performances I've seen in years. I thought David Byrne was unbelievably great on it. But you mentioned when you actually tweeted out that you laughed out loud more at John Mulaney's SNL monologue than the rest of the season put together.
And I know you disagree with me on John Mulaney.
Well, first of all, the airport sushi thing was brilliant, and I know that he was responsible for that. And I think the guy's got a great comic mind, and he's a great writer. The delivery makes me nuts.
It's what he does, and it's how he gets away with what he does. The sort of, oh, look, I'm a 35-year-old man-child, and I can get away with saying anything I want, but I'm not a, you know, I'm not a bro-y kind of 35-year-old
right.
man-child.
Right.
I don't even know how to describe what it is that he does. I think he's fairly brilliant, and it continues to make me sad that his one real attempt to break into TV was a short-lived Fox sitcom that was just horrible.
Yeah.
And it happens with so many different people that you try to find a way to channel what they do into a sitcom, and you just sometimes can't do it. And boy, was Mulaney on Fox.
It was terrible. Yeah, it was terrible.
But I think he's great.
You mentioned it. Well, I thought it was a solid episode. And again, like I said, that David Byrne performance was just, I just was blown away. But I love Talking Heads and I love David Byrne. I'm already predisposed to like it, but that was exceptional, I thought.
Now, have you watched the Sack Lunch Bunch or not?
No, I have not. Yeah, I've not yet watched it. I wanted you to mention that again because the last time you talked about it, you said you loved it so much.
I think it's wonderful, but knowing your feelings about John Mulaney, I don't know that it's likely to change those feelings. On the other hand, it has a lot of great musical performances, and I think it's terrific and one of my favorite things of, you know, the past however long, past few months to be sure. If you don't like his particular delivery, I don't know if it'll work, but give it a shot because the musical performances are super.
Okay, well, tell everybody what we're talking about. Clarify this John Mulaney show.
This is John Mulaney and the Sack Lunch Bunch. It premiered at the end of December, I believe, on Netflix, and it's basically John Mulaney doing a children's special with a group of kids who are all extremely talented musical theater performers themselves, and you will be seeing many of them in sitcoms and TV shows and plays for years to come. And it's not really a parody of the genre, but occasionally it is. It's full of musical performances and musical guests, including David Byrne, including Jake Gyllenhaal, who also popped up on SNL over the weekend.
Yep.
Because they're buddies, and a few other very recognizable people if you're in the Broadway circle, you know, if you follow that world. And John Mulaney is a big old Broadway fan.
Yep.
That's well established as one of his things. It's just, to me, I thought that was as fun and pleasant an 85 minutes of TV special as there's been in months, and I hope that he gets the chance, if he wants to do another installment, but he may just have thought it was a fun one-off to do
yeah.
for kicks.
Okay, well, and that's streaming on Netflix right now.
Indeed.
Okay, Dan Feinberg from the Hollywood Reporter. We're talking television. 312-981-7200. Follow him at The Fine Print, FIEN. And the television talk continues right here on 720 WGN.
Time was drifting. This rock got to roll. So I hit the road and made my getaway. Restless feeling. Really got a hold. Started searching for a better way. And I kept on looking for a sign in the middle of the night. But I couldn't see the light. No, I couldn't see the light. I kept on looking for a way to take me through the night. Couldn't get it right.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We continue with the show. And here we are. And it'll be a Thursday in a few minutes, and so we'll keep you company till 4 a.m. And Marnie Shore from The Takeout is going to join us. We're going to have some food conversations, have a lot of fun doing that, and then we're going to taste test microwave popcorn. We love to do the taste test stuff when she's here. It is the 5th of March is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, if you can believe that. And so we're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. Classic stand-up from Richard Pryor. We got gadgets that would confuse modern generations and much more. Phone number is 312-981-7200, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Dan Feinberg from The Hollywood Reporter, TV critic, joins us every couple of weeks to talk TV. And Dan is here. Dan, tell me about It's Personal with Amy Hogart.
Yeah, if people remember, there was a very short-lived pseudo-documentary comedy series called Almost Royal a couple years ago about two people remarkably far down the line of succession. Part of the joke was each episode would note that they were further away in the line of succession than they were previously. So one episode was like 65th in line. And so Amy Hogart was one of the two actors in that. And for the past couple years, she's been a occasional correspondent on Full Frontal with Samantha Bee. And she's just really funny. She has a perky British sense of humor that she uses as an excuse to allow her to say many, many things, which is, you know, something that many British comics on American TV have been doing. It's Personal is her new true TV series, and it's really hard to describe because the premise is that she's not a qualified therapist, but she cares a lot, and so she goes around trying to help people who have not serious problems, but moderate problems. So the first episode was someone with sort of social anxiety issues, and she tried to help him because he couldn't get a job. There's a later episode that's about someone who believes that she's not getting promotions in work because she doesn't have a sense of humor. So Amy tries to help her get a sense of humor. A later episode involves a young college student who's feeling insecure and having body issues because she goes to college in Miami and feels like Miami has been overtaken with hard bodies, and you just can't be a normal person in Miami. And so she's got an inferiority complex. And so Amy Hogart tries to talk these people through their problems. It's an unsteady premise, because if the person has real problems, it's hard to watch what Amy Hogart's doing and feeling like it's really accomplishing anything, and maybe it's potentially, you know, doing more harm than good. So of the three episodes I've seen, the Miami one was the one I liked the most because it was the most surmountable problem. She basically takes it upon herself to give this young college student a new perspective on Miami so that she both understands that Miami is not only this one thing, but also to some degree work through her body issues. And it feels like exactly the right level of issue for what a show like this can do. So I'm going to be curious what the show is as it progresses, because I think Amy Hogart is really talented, and I'm kind of surprised that she hasn't had the opportunity to have a vehicle like this, you know, frequently and constantly. I think if Almost Royal came out today, it would probably be a small hit if it were in the right place, because, you know, thanks to Meghan Markle, we're much more conversant about British royalty than we were then.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think she's really talented. I think this is an unsteady introduction in her new show. I would like to believe that it will have the opportunity to grow and kind of find its voice, because under the right circumstances and with the right curation of issues, I think it could be a good show.
And it's now, and these people are real, right? These are people who are real people with real problems.
And with real people with real problems, and the beginning makes it clear that they were all properly vetted by actual licensed professionals before Amy got anywhere near them.
Oh, okay.
And,
all right.
You know, like, she's not really out there to do damage to people, but you can also tell that the show ideally would like to help talk people through some stuff, you know, like to have conversations about things. And part of the gimmick is that Amy somewhat, you know, she makes everything that she's investigating half about her. So on one hand, she's very much trying to help the people. On the other hand, she's very much tying it into her own insecurities. And that's funny also, but it's another thing that's funny when the person is, let's just say, 85% okay, and they've got maybe 15% they need to work on. The person with anxiety who couldn't get a job in the first episode, I thought he was probably more in the 55 to 60% troubled range, and it was too much. And then the person who didn't have a sense of humor, she was already an EVP of content strategy at some company or other, so she'd been doing well, clearly, without making jokes at dinner parties. So that, to me, felt too little. It was like someone who maybe had a 5% problem.
Yeah.
I think the Miami episode is someone with exactly the right size problem. So that's what they should aim for in the future.
That's a really interesting premise. It's unusual. I've never heard anything like this.
It's interesting. It's the kind of thing which, in the wrong hands, is 75 different lawsuits waiting to happen.
Right.
So I assume they're being extremely careful in the vetting process, and I hope they are, because if the person's problem is too serious, you really can't watch it in this context. Already there are too many shows that have the sort of man on the street, the Jordan Klepler kind of thing, where you go and you interview people who are clearly borderline insane, and you're just like, okay, ha ha ha, I'm going to make fun of you now. And sometimes it's very funny, but sometimes you're also like, okay, that person is just troubled, and they need more than being made fun of on national TV for what's actually wrong with them.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. That's why the premise, it's just the premise alone, the idea alone, makes me a little uncomfortable. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally. No, and again, I would tell you that if you're curious, wait a couple weeks and check out the Miami episode.
Okay.
Don't check out either of the first two episodes. But it's a somewhat cringy premise, and obviously they think that the premise is also at least a somewhat big swing. I mean, it's not just another, you know, person on the street interviewing people. They want it to be something that could have value, I guess. So yeah, it's interesting. And again, I think she's really good, and I think she's really smart.
I loved her on Full Frontal, and so, you know, I am a fan, and I'm curious about this. It's on True TV on Wednesday nights. Again, this one premiered tonight. So
last week, I believe.
Oh, last week. Okay, so, premiered last week, but it's out on Wednesdays.
In, people can check that out.
All right, yep. Next week, I'll definitely tune in. Okay, Dan Feinberg is here. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We got a couple of texts coming in with some thoughts about TV. And if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio Show continues.
After midnight, we're going to let it all hang out. After midnight, we're gonna chug, lug, and shine. We're gonna cause talk and suspicion, give an exhibition, find out what it is all about. After midnight, we're gonna let it all hang out.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. Coming up in a little bit, Marnie Shore from The Takeout is going to join us. We've got a lot of fun food topics to talk about. We're also going to do a taste test of microwave popcorn. We're going to talk about gadgets that would confuse modern generations. Our classic stand-up right from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV. We'll get an appearance from Richard Pryor. And John Belushi, this is now officially the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death. We're going to pay tribute to the great John Belushi. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We continue our conversation with Dan Feinberg. Dan, a couple of shows that I want to mention that I am enjoying very much.
Okay, bring it on.
First one, of course, is Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, which I just love. And it's people are watching this show, right?
Some people are, yeah. I get the feel, again, we don't know anymore who's watching things until basically 3 weeks after they've aired. But I get the impression some people are watching it. Yeah. The past couple episodes have been really good. I thought this week's episode, which focused on Alex Newell's character, I thought that was a really strong episode.
Yeah.
The third episode where Lauren Graham actually got to sing, I was relieved that they let her do that.
Yeah, I got to say, that's one of my favorite things ever, is watching Lauren Graham sing Wrecking Ball. I just thought, I was like, this is pure joy right here.
Wrecking Ball, and then the Katy Perry song also.
Yeah.
Yep. No, they've been giving a lot of people really good things to do, and Jane Levy is just so wonderful, and I can't emphasize enough how pleasant it is to actually see her smiling, because
yeah.
so much of her persona has been kind of surly over the years.
It has.
She's so great at that.
Yeah,
she's watching her smile is just great.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you know, like the first time I really went nuts over her was the Evil Dead remake, and that's about as far removed as from this as possible. But I've been a fan since that performance, and I've loved her in everything that I see her in.
She's really good. So yeah, okay. So what's the next show on your list?
Awkwafina is Nora from Queens. Kills me. I just think it's hilarious, and I'm so glad that this is a showcase for it. She's having such a great time now, Awkwafina. What a great period of time for her, and I just think the show is hilarious. I really do.
It's a really good show, and they're letting her do what she wants to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know what? It kind of fills the void that was left by Broad City, in that kind of way. It has a little bit of a similar vibe to it. And I think it's great, and I think she's great. So
agreed.
All right. We've got a couple of texts here. Steve says, does Dan know when my favorite FX comedy, What We Do in the Shadows, is coming back?
Next month or the month after. It's another one of the shows that's lined up for the spring. Basically, there were those those couple quiet months for FX, but it is coming back in the spring. I have seen exactly one scene from the new season,
uh-huh.
which does not count as enough. So,
yeah.
But yes, I'm looking forward to seeing more of it, because it's a show that I was mixed on last season, but when it was good, it was fantastic. So
maybe I'm
hoping it's a little bit more consistent.
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I think a lot more than you did, because I laughed a lot. There was one episode that I thought was not very good, but that all the other episodes, I particularly the episode with all the cameos of all the other vampires, I just thought was hilarious.
That was one of the best half hours of comedy all of last year.
Absolutely. No question about it. Okay. It's Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, and we're talking TV. And tell me about I'm Not Okay With This. I saw the trailer for it, and I'm very intrigued. I have not watched an episode yet.
This is one where it is as easy a binge as one could possibly imagine. It is a 7-episode first season. It is based on a graphic novel by the same author, Charles Forsman, who did The End of the Bleeping World. Notice how I'm avoiding
yep.
getting bleeped myself here.
Yep. yep.
And it feels a lot like that. It is very obviously in that vein, and they're obviously steering into it directly. So it's Charles Forsman graphic novel, Jonathan Entwistle, who was one of the directors on the first season, is the director of the entire first season of End of the Bleeping World, rather, is the director of the entire season of I'm Not Okay With This. And it's a coming of age story. It stars Sophia Lillis, who people will know as the young Jessica Chastain from the first movie of the two It movies,
right.
or as the young Amy Adams from Sharp Objects.
Right.
And it's just a good star vehicle for her. It shows how very totally qualified she is to not play the younger version of a famous redhead, to simply be the star redhead herself.
Right.
And so it's about a teenage girl who's struggling with adolescence, but also beginning to experience superpowers, as one does. So it's a little bit Carrie as a romantic dramedy to some degree. She's also coming to terms with her sexuality, which through the first season is somewhat in flux. The coming of age stuff I really thought was wonderfully handled. It was shot in and around Pittsburgh, and it's got a very nice Pennsylvania blue-collar feel to it. It's very grounded. Again, Sophia Lillis is great. The male lead is Wyatt Olef, who was also in It. And they've got a nice, easygoing, geeky chemistry together. There's a heavy John Hughes influence. The downside of the show is that the superhero stuff or the superpower stuff is really by the numbers. And it feels, for the most part in the first season, like it's unnecessary, and yet they keep bringing it back. And I get the feeling it's going to be very important in subsequent seasons, assuming there are. But more than anything, it's 7 episodes, and you can do it in less than an afternoon. And for the most part, I liked its vibe. I laughed a handful of times. I thought it was sweet and accurate at other times. It's got a great soundtrack. And, yeah, superpowers, if that's the thing it's going to take to get somebody to watch it. I like this show. I wanted to love it because I loved End of the Bleeping World. It is not as good as the first season of End of the Bleeping World, but I think it is very solid as its own thing.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to it because I really like Sophia Lillis. I think she's great.
You should check it out. It is now available on Netflix, as it were.
Netflix. All right. Dan Feinberg talking TV, and it continues on 720 WGN.
Well, it's all.
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN on this Thursday morning, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. TV conversation with Dan Feinberg continues. Dan, okay, I am so curious about Devs because I love Alex Garland. I think that more people should have seen Annihilation, but they didn't. I just love his stuff.
Well, if you love Alex Garland, you will discover that Devs is very, very Alex Garland-y.
Good.
And so, you know, it is not diluted particularly. It is an 8-episode limited FX on Hulu series, so it will be on Hulu primarily. So that is where people will find it. And the first 2 episodes, I believe, go up tomorrow or today, depending on what day it is.
It goes up on Thursday. Okay, so it goes up today.
Yes, in the first 2 episodes. And it this may be one where, I mean, I understand restraint is a difficult thing, and so you may not be able to do it. It may benefit, though, from binging, because it's kind of a mood piece in that Alex Garland-y kind of way. It's hypnotic.
For people who might not know who Alex Garland is, he's a writer-director who did, as I mentioned, Annihilation, which was a really great and weird movie with Natalie Portman, and he did Ex Machina, which is a fantastic movie. So,
indeed. He also wrote 28 Days Later.
Yep.
His first novel is The Beach, which I feel like has over the years gotten kind of a bum rap because the Danny Boyle movie adaptation of it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But it's a book I really, really enjoyed. I haven't read it since I was, 20, but when I was 20, it was awesome.
Yeah.
So who knows?
Yeah.
But he has, since he became basically a writer, director, auteur, you've been able to see what his fascinations are, and they tend to revolve around sort of intermediate future, not like hundreds of years in the future, but a couple years in the future, and the evolution of technology and its dehumanizing influence. And in that respect, Devs is a little bit like an extended Black Mirror episode, but I preferred it to most of those. The premise is almost impossible to describe without spoiling things, and there's really no good reason to spoil it. Basically, Nick Offerman plays Forrest, the CEO of a Bay Area tech company called Amaya. Sonia Mizuno, who's been in both of Alex Garland's previous writing directing episodes plays a young woman who's a computer engineer, and her boyfriend just got inducted into a mysterious program at this company called Devs, which is a remote building on the campus that is basically a shimmering gold cube where people are programming code towards a goal that it takes multiple episodes to figure out what it is, but whatever they're doing there, it causes something to happen to Lily's boyfriend, and she investigates what happened. And that is the vaguest way I can put what the plot is.
Right.
And if you were just to break down what happens in the show, it's probably a sort of techno-noir movie that could have been done in 95 minutes, but it's stretched over 8 episodes because the pacing is hypnotic and unique, and sometimes it's slow in ways that are infuriating, but intentionally so. Other times it moves really, really fast, and they go through things much faster than you expect. It's a very strong cast beyond those guys. Nick Offerman is terrific. He's playing it totally serious and straight, and it's a great performance. Lots of just very good character actors, from Allison Pill, who's kind of everywhere this spring.
Yeah.
Theater great Stephen McKinley Henderson has a great role. Zach Grenier, who people will know from The Good Wife and The Good Fight, has a key role. They're all great, and all of the tech people are the people who Alex Garland has been working with on his movies. So there is continuity in cinematography. Rob Hardy shot it, and he shot Garland's movies. Production design, the composers are the same, and it's you just want to kind of bathe in the mood that it sets. I was, if I'm being frank, somewhat disappointed by the ending. It comes out a little bit more pat than I would have liked for it to. I just wanted something more. But definitely for 6 or 7 episodes, I was just enjoying watching this happen and watching that FX let Alex Garland just do his thing. There is no sense at all of interference or anything like it. You're just watching a person with a very particular sensibility and worldview do his thing, and it's impressive to see at its very best. It is at times quite beautiful, and the fifth and sixth episodes in particular, I thought were superior.
I'm so glad to hear that, because I'm a huge fan of Alex Garland. I think he's got, as you said, a very unique point of view and perspective, and I think he's a remarkable writer and filmmaker. So I'm very excited about this.
Some people, particularly after the first episode, are going to be pulling their hair out if they don't know Alex Garland's thing and they don't know his particular sense of pacing, because it is. Very foggy and obtuse what is happening, and you're either going to be like, okay, I'm just following this wherever it's going, or you're going to be like, I want something. Tell me what I need to know.
Yeah,
and that's not the way he tells stories. Yeah,
I know. I saw Annihilation with my parents. They were like, huh?
I think that's a fair response.
Yeah.
But that's also a movie where either you're going to be like, I want to know exactly what is happening, and I need you to explain this to me, because otherwise it's going to infuriate me.
Yeah.
Or you just sit there and you go, ooh, shimmery.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And so it's on FX Hulu, and it's tonight, right?
Yes. First 2 episodes, and then it will be weekly on Thursdays from now.
That's fantastic. That's such great news. Before we get you out of here, did you watch the full season of Better Call Saul?
No, I have only seen the first 4 episodes. So I've seen the 3 that have already aired, and then I've seen next week's episode as well.
And they're all great, I'm assuming.
They are all terrific. It is such a good show, and it is a show that is so confident in what it is at this point. And all of the performances are so good, and you know, it's just good that we're back in the portion of spring where Better Call Saul is there, where Better Things is there. There are a lot of people who are totally going to dig Devs, and if people wait a couple weeks, Westworld's going to come back. I haven't watched it yet, so I have no answers on that. But Yeah, we're, you know, it's not like there was ever a slow period, and it's not like anyone should have ever lacked for good TV, but we are right back in the middle of it.
I got to say, as a Chicagoan who's been following Bob Odenkirk's career, I never would have thought that, he would be doing, getting all this praise and, award nominations for a serious and dramatic role.
And a subtle and serious dramatic role that was based on a character who on Breaking Bad was introduced as basically comic relief.
Yeah.
Because he's the goofy attorney on Breaking Bad, and everyone's like, okay, the new series about him is going to be wacky and funny Saul Goodman, and yay. And that's just not the show it's become, and the show it's become is so much better than anyone had any reason to expect it would be.
Yeah.
So all praise to that show.
Yeah, and good for him. I've been a fan of his since he was at Second City here in Chicago. I was studying at Second City when he was on the main stage with Farley. and I got to see a lot of his work on Second City. Of course, Mr. Show is one of my favorite things ever. So it's nice to see him getting all this praise. I'd like to see him win an Emmy. Wouldn't that be nice?
It really would be. And I have high hopes that with two seasons left to go, and with the work he's doing and the show is doing, that he's going to eventually win one, and that Ray Seahorn, who has never been nominated, will eventually be nominated and maybe win.
Yeah.
Jonathan Banks, this week's episode and next week's episode, I'm not sure he's ever been better. It would be nice if he could win.
Yeah.
Just everything got sort of caught up in basically like four seasons of Emmy voters giving nonstop awards to Game of Thrones.
Right.
And I'm hopeful that it will be a good opportunity to get some new blood in there this year.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Dan, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Till the next time, Nick.
Okay, buddy. Bye. Dan Feinberg, he's great, and I love talking TV with him. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We will be joined by Marnie Shore, who's editor-in-chief of The Takeout. We're going to talk about some food topics, and then we're going to do a taste test of microwave popcorn. We love to do the taste tests when Marnie comes in. All right. Nick DiGilio show continues right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's a Thursday morning. 312-981-7200. If you can believe it, today is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, so we're going to pay tribute to him. Classic stand-up comedy from The Tonight Show, Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV. Richard Pryor, the one and only, will be hearing that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Marnie Shores, editor-in-chief of The Takeout. Hi, Marnie.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Good, good, good. Thanks for coming out.
Oh, absolutely.
And we're going to do a taste test. You know, many times that you come down here, we do a taste test. Usually it's a blind taste test.
That's right.
But we're just going to eat popcorn and know the brand that we're eating. So we're smelling up the whole 18th floor with a lovely popcorn odor.
But it's a nice scent.
No, popcorn is a lovely smell. It's just that when people come in, I don't know if it's going to clear, because people start coming in around 4, you know, 4:30, I don't know if it's going to clear out by then. So people might come in and go, I'm hungry.
I got to say, when we, I had to, you know, use two different microwaves at once to microwave all this popcorn, and I had to apologize to all my coworkers in advance because that scent did linger. But at least I didn't burn any of it. That's the worst.
That's the worst part. And we've got Tom is in charge of, by the way, making the popcorn in the microwave, and hopefully he'll do it well.
He hasn't burned it yet.
No, he has not. I can smell the lovely wafting. So we're going to taste test different types of popcorn. First of all, tell us about The Takeout, of which you were editor-in-chief.
Sure. The Takeout, which you can read at thetakeout.com, is a food website, But unlike some other sites that are primarily based in, you know, New York, LA, or that just review restaurants, we kind of cover food on a more national level. And our tagline is food is delicious. And that's kind of what we like to remind everybody all the time. We do taste tests like the popcorn taste test we're about to do right now. We tell people about the latest news in food and a lot of like odd stories that pop up in the food world.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of personal essays about how food impacts people's lives, lots of different stuff like that, because food impacts us all and everybody has a story to tell.
Yeah, that's true. And it's a terrific website, thetakeout.com. And oh, by the way, the last time you were here was not for a food related topic. It was the it's Valentine's Day.
That's right. We were with Mortified Chicago.
That's right. Mortified Chicago. How did the show go?
Oh, it was probably the best one I've ever seen.
Is that right?
I'm not even joking.
Well, first of all, explain Mortified to us so that we
sure.
can
learn. Mortified is a stage show, a podcast, a book series, and a Netflix series. And it's in several cities around the country and the world, and it features people reading or performing the things that they created as kids.
Right.
Which most of the time is diary and journal entries. And so people have found this stuff that they really wrote when they were younger, and they perform it so that we can all share the shame together.
I love Mortified. I've loved it for years. I've had people from Mortified on the show many, many times. And, but so you did a Valentine's Day, Mortified.
Yes, it was called the Doomed Valentine's Day Show, and it was at our new location at Sleeping Village, and it was phenomenal because, you know, people are extra vulnerable on Valentine's Day, and, you know, the audience was supportive, and just, you couldn't even get a sentence out from these journal entries without just so much laughter, just escaping everybody.
Well, I mean, you know, as you know, When you're younger and you think you're in love, it's always hilarious. You know what I mean? And everybody's had that experience. That's the other thing about Mortified. It's a universal thing. Everybody has stuff in their closet that they did when they were younger that is absolutely embarrassing and ridiculous.
That's right.
That's one of the reasons why Mortified works so much. And when you add love to the mix, it's even more ridiculous.
Oh yeah, and it was a lot of heartbreak that was rendered on the page.
Yeah, it's funny because you know when you're 13 or 14 or something and your heart is broken, you think the world is over.
Oh yeah,
it's like really bad.
Because what else has happened to you by then?
Exactly,
it's the main event.
Exactly. Do you have another? Is there another Mortified event coming up?
Yes, there will be a show on Mother's Day. And can imagine what the theme of that one might be.
Yeah. We'll get you back in here
to talk
about that.
And tickets are now on sale, so you can go to getmortified.com and check that out,
too. Okay. It's really great and really entertaining stuff. Getmortified.com. All right. Back to the takeout, which is food-related. This story has been making the rounds. Obviously on late night TV, you're going to get a lot of mileage out of this. The guys, the late night hosts are, you know, dropping it in during their news bits. There's a guy here in Chicago. Okay. It's Lent for those of you who don't know, which explains the proliferation of Filet-O-Fish commercials that we see on TV all the time. So this guy is local. He's in Chicago. And you have to give, if you're Catholic, you have to give something up for Lent. And most people give up meat and things like that.
That's
some people stop drinking, you know, that kind of thing. This guy has decided. What are you?
I was just going to say I gave up chocolate for 25 Lents straight in my life, but I was eventually told by everyone I know that I should stop doing that because I got so grouchy for all of Lent. So they very kindly asked me to not do that anymore.
Well, what did you give up this year?
Nothing.
Oh.
So I replaced chocolate with living my life the way I want
to. That's a good decision, I think. Yeah. So anyway, this is the deal. And you guys wrote about this on the takeout.
Yeah.
The guy in Chicago, go ahead, tell the story here.
So it's a guy named Pat Berger. He owns Patty Long's and Kaiser Tiger, if anyone's heard of those. They're pretty big bars, and he wanted to forego all food for Lent, but he wanted to replace all food with just beer. Unlike other people who have attempted this sort of thing in the past, he did seem pretty focused on doing it the right way, getting vitamins into his diet. He spoke with some doctors to make sure he wasn't just, you know, really compromising his health for this stunt. And so right now he is taking I think he is taking vitamin supplements, and he's drinking a variety of beers, which I don't know the science behind it, but maybe that diversifies your grain intake or something.
Something to the, yeah, I would imagine that that, and being this guy who owns these bars, you know, and knows a lot about beer, is going to know what the content of the beer is.
That's right.
You know.
Yeah, and he was deliberate about it in a way, because unlike others who might just think it's a stunt or see if they could try to do it, he was trying to emulate a certain order of monks that would actually do this historically.
Right, right.
Or so he says, you know. But that was kind of the idea behind it. So it was a purposeful Lenten sacrifice, but it's also just really fun to read about and think about. And he's been updating his blog about it. And he says that he feels like he's really turned a corner and found his groove with this beer-only diet. So maybe he'll keep it up beyond Lent. Who knows?
It's just such a, it's so strange. I mean, but he is taking it seriously. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's weird. I still think it's very, very weird. but he did take it seriously, consulted, you know, physicians and things like that. But we'll see what's so, but right now he's still on this diet, right?
Yeah. And I think he's beer. Lost about 18 pounds, but he says he feels good.
Wait. He lost 18 pounds?
Well,
if he's not eating,
that's
okay,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay,
it's the liquid diet.
Because I was going to say, you know, I was a beer drinker, mm-hmm. and you know, I have the belly to prove it.
Oh yeah, it never made me lose weight.
No.
Drinking beer.
No, of course not. Well, this might change people's opinions then.
That's right.
We'll keep track of this. When is Easter this year?
April 12th.
April 12th. Okay, so he's still got a little while to go.
He might be done early because he shifted it upward a little bit so that it would work on his schedule. I think he had some conflicts that meant he would have to eat some food. So maybe he'll be done even sooner. And then
okay.
We can check on his progress.
All right. And his name again is Pat Berger. And I know Patty Long's, but I don't know Kaiser Tiger.
Kaiser Tiger's a big one. They do a 5-pound meat log that you can order with your friends.
What?
It's called The Bomb.
Wait. What meat log?
It's like, what is it? It's like ground beef and something else wrapped in like sugared bacon. And So it's called The Bomb, and you can order it.
And share it with your friends?
Hopefully you share it with your friends.
How big is it?
I don't know. I mean, I've seen a picture of it, but it's hard for scale. I have to think it's about the size of a human baby.
Good Lord. And it's all just meat and bacon.
It's just meat. Yep.
Oh, man.
Probably goes well with beer.
I absolutely. There's no question about it. And so this is at Kaiser Tiger. Where is Kaiser
yes.
Tiger?
I believe it's in West Loop.
In the West Loop. Okay.
I'm not entirely sure about that. But I used to work at a restaurant review site, and I would read about The Bomb on the regular.
Now, have you tried it?
No, I haven't, but I really want to.
No, you've already, you know, piqued my interest. There's no question about it.
I just have to invite 40 friends to Kaiser Tiger to help me eat it.
To help you eat the baby-sized, the human baby-sized meatloaf.
That's right.
Meat log, as they refer to it. Okay. All right. Well, there you go. So, you know, he can't eat any of that, though. He can't have a bomb.
I hope he's not around the food at Kaiser Tiger all day. That would be heartbreaking.
Yeah, right. That's true. That's true, man. Okay. All right. Well, here's the deal. We got the wafting air of popcorn is in the studio. Mm-hmm. And how many are we trying here? How many did you try?
Well, we tried, how many did we try? We had 8 different kinds in our initial test.
Okay.
And we tried to go for the ones that can be found at most grocery stores, so you're not getting anything too exclusive or regional.
Right.
And we also tried to get the butter versions of each because, you know, there's plenty of seasoned popcorns you can buy or kettle corn, but this is more about, you know, that classic microwave popcorn experience. What's going to give you the best experience?
Right. Okay. Well, let's see. Marnie Schur is here. She's editor-in-chief of The Takeout. They did a popcorn taste test, and we're going to do that. So Marnie's here, and I'm here, and you're here. 312-981-7200 as we continue on WGN.
Love's last episode. There.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN as we continue through the morning here till 4 a.m. It is Thursday morning. And with me in studio is Marnie Shore, who's editor-in-chief at The Takeout, which is a great food website.
Oh, thank you.
And you recently, you and your cohorts over at The Takeout, did a microwave popcorn taste test.
We did. It was a pretty big operation involving two microwaves and eight bags of popcorn and several dozen colleagues.
Right, right. And everybody, pretty much everybody in the office would pop in and take a taste test and leave notes, correct?
Yes. That's not always the case when we do taste tests, but this was, you know, so many bags and it was all going to go to waste anyway.
Yeah.
And their feedback was incredibly valuable because it was nice to know that we had some consensus builders in the popcorn universe.
Mm-hmm. And you went to with the sort of butter flavored variety.
Yes, we wanted store brands that were available nationwide and the butter flavor to get sort of a sense of the baseline that these brands are working with.
Okay. All right. Well, what's the first brand that we will be tasting here? Okay, it's Pop Secret.
Pop Secret.
Which I've had. Mm-hmm. Which I've had. And you tasted Pop Secret?
We did.
In the office. Well, mm-hmm. Let's taste it. I make sure I got a glass of water here. Yeah. All right. Hmm. It's pretty good.
I don't know about you, but I always go for the pieces that look the most coated in butter first.
Yeah.
Like the yellowest ones.
Yeah.
And what I love about this is how salty it is.
It's very
salty.
I'm
a big salt fan. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe that's too much for some people, but it's very salty and good.
It's tasty. Mm-hmm. And that's a very popular, isn't that a very popular brand?
It is. It's, you know, I think of the big three as Pop Secret, Orville Redenbacher, and Act Two.
Yeah.
Just thinking about what I saw at the grocery store most growing up.
Yeah.
Followed by, you know, Jolly Time and I grew up with Orville. I don't think I even knew that I could buy other brands as a kid because that's just what was always in our house.
Was Orville.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm trying to think of what I grew up with. We used to do the Jiffy Pop.
Oh, yeah.
Where you get the, it comes with the little pan and you mm-hmm. put it on the thing and then the big, people don't remember it. You just watch the beginning of Scream because it's featured prominently.
Yes.
Okay.
It is.
So, Pop Secret, and it went over pretty well with the staff, right?
It did. I think people, you know, like us, appreciate the salt.
Yeah. It's a nice salty. Okay. What do we got next? This is Boom Chicka Pop.
Yes. Angie's is a brand that does a lot of, like natural, that's like they're billing themselves like a natural food company. And so Boom Chicka Pop is their microwave popcorn. They also sell it in bags of pre-made popcorn.
Oh, okay. So it's Angie's Boom Chicka Pop Real Butter Microwave Popcorn. Mm-hmm. That's what we got right here.
Yep.
All right, let's try this. Oh, man, this is good.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you think is better about this one than the last one?
Well, the salt, it's butterier.
Mm-hmm.
I like the texture more. And there's a, I don't know, there's a nice corn taste to it.
Exactly. And that's something that I didn't really think about when we undertook this taste test is you can taste the corn of popcorn. And,
yeah. You
know, it's usually hiding under a lot of butter and salt. But you can taste the corn flavor and the texture. Some kernels are just fluffier than others. And this has a nice balance of all.
This is really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good popcorn.
It doesn't taste like you made it in a microwave.
No, it doesn't at all. Boy, it's good. Man, I could eat this all day. Angie's Boom Chicka Pop Real Butter Microwave Popcorn. So far, that's my favorite.
Awesome.
We've only had two, and we're testing five. And you guys tested how many?
Eight.
Eight. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're only testing five. But that one, that's very impressive. Did it go over well with the?
It went over very well.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, that's like addictive.
Yeah, a lot of people wrote down their thoughts with exclamation points with Angie's. Yeah.
Okay, Orville Redenbacher.
The classic.
The classic. The classic Orville Redenbacher. This is the one you grew up on.
It is.
Okay, let's try Orville Redenbacher. Here we go. Yeah.
It tastes the way I remember it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I think that I taste in this, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, a little more oil than butter.
Yeah.
You know? And it's the taste of childhood.
Yeah, it is. It's good. I don't think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not as good as the last one.
Yeah, not as fluffy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a little bit, like you said, it's a little more oily. You know, this is the first one that we've had where the residue is left on my fingers.
Oh, yeah. That's an interesting point.
Yeah. That's the first one we've tried that where it leaves that oily residue.
And that's less practical if you're sitting watching a movie and want to use the remote to change the channel.
That's true. You got to have a napkin. I got to take a sip of water here. All right. What do we got next?
Next up, we have
Organics Simply Salted Popcorn.
Yes, it's that O Organics brand see in a lot of grocery stores.
Right, O Organics brand, Simply Salted Organic Popcorn. Mm-hmm. All right, and these are all, as you said, the ones that you guys tested are readily available in grocery stores and
yes,
that you can get.
Definitely.
All right, let's try this one. O Organics Simply Salted. All right, popcorn, here we go.
No. The face you're making.
Yeah, no. No.
It's funny how sometimes a bad batch can be blamed on how long you microwaved it or something, but this tastes just the way it did in our taste test, which I likened to nibbling styrofoam.
Yep. That's about right.
And the one of our taste testers at the office wrote down a beautiful note, which was that the kernels were burly. Which they are. They're hard to bite through. They're kind of burly.
That's true. No, this is bad popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad popcorn.
And I hesitate to assign that to the fact that it's organic or anything. It just seems like they're afraid to put too much butter and salt on it for the health conscious people.
Right. It says here, this popcorn had the most unyielding bite,
mm-hmm.
like nibbling into styrofoam. It's bland, colorless, and puts up a fight. Who wants to pay to have that kind of experience? Products like this give... Organics a bad name. On the plus side, bad popcorn inspired some of the best and most thoughtful feedback, and you mentioned the kernels were burly.
Yes.
So, all right, what do we got here? Which one is this, Tom? Okay, we got this. It's the last one, right? Okay, here's the last one, and it is Jolly Time Simply Popped.
Yeah. So this is not the classic Jolly Time. This is more of a not organic, but playing to that natural popcorn.
Yeah. Sort of. Jolly Time was a staple when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a staple. Okay, so Jolly Time. Here we go. Oh, man, this is good. This is good.
I love this one, too. I'm glad we're on the same page about all these.
Yeah, this is really good. This is classic popcorn. You know
classic.
What I mean? Classic.
And the funniest thing that one of my coworkers mentioned when we were tasting this was they said... This tastes like they went to the most corporate meetings to decide how the popcorn should taste and how they should market it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it worked.
Well, again, Jolly Time is a legendary brand of popcorn, and they did not disappoint. This is really good stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's classic. Jolly Time is just classic. But mm-hmm. I got to say, of the five that we tasted, Angie's Boom Chicka Pop, that's the one I like the most.
And that is the one that everybody in our taste test liked the most.
Is that
almost
right?
Almost unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Butter flavor and salt and corn. What could you want besides that?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah.
Now, what were the other ones that we didn't taste?
Let's see. Signature Select Home Style
mm-hmm.
is kind of a house brand that you can find at any number of, I think it's, Safeway or those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
The house brand, and that was... A pretty middle-of-the-road popcorn.
It was
not good, not bad. And then we did Act Two Butter Lovers, which was the yellowest by far. I mean, it was neon yellow.
Yeah.
And that was pretty polarizing, but I really liked it.
Well, Act Two, I've had Act Two many, many times, and I like their popcorn.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
It's
and then
good
the last
stuff.
One here, Skinny Girl Butter and Sea Salt Popcorn.
Yes. Skinny Girl is... A brand that, markets itself as the lower calorie option. And the bag was hilariously tiny. It's like a personal sized bag. And mostly, maybe because it was so small, but when we microwaved it, it just tasted very burnt.
Okay. That's not good.
No.
No, that's not good. All right. Well, that was fun. And you can read all about the taste test at the takeout. How long has this been up on online?
A couple weeks now.
Okay.
And we've got some other fun taste tests in the works as well.
What are you looking for? What are you going to be doing?
Well, Easter's coming up, so I was undertaking a taste test of all the grocery store jelly beans.
Oh.
Because now they do all sorts of candy-flavored jelly beans, including Peeps-flavored jelly beans.
Oh, God.
Sour Patch Kid flavor, Starburst, all sorts of stuff like that.
Yeah. All right. So that's coming up. Jelly beans. We'll get you back down here and eat some jelly beans.
For sure.
All right. Marnie Scher is here, editor-in-chief of The Takeout. That was fun. Popcorn taste test. You can check it out on the website. We got more food stuff to talk about as the Nick DiGilio Show continues.
I'm going up to say someone has taken my place. When times go bad, when times go rough, won't you lay me down in the tall grass and let me do my stuff? I know I got nothing on you. I know that there's nothing to do. When times go bad, you can't get enough. Won't you lay me down in the tall grass and let me do my stuff?
Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. We got our classic stand-up right from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV. We've got The Legend, an appearance on The Tonight Show from Richard Pryor. We'll play that one back. It is officially the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, which is amazing that it's been 38 years. And we're going to pay tribute to the late, great John Belushi. We're going to talk about gadgets that are going to confuse modern generations. Kids don't know what they're talking about anymore, and much more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Marnie Scher is in a studio with me, editor-in-chief of The Takeout. We had a lovely little snack of different types of popcorn.
Yes, we did.
And it was very satisfying and fun, and you can see the results of their their popcorn taste test at thetakeout.com. But we have more food topics to talk about here. And this is a piece that you wrote that was written on at The Takeout, and it says, Last Call. Are you a Guinness World Record holder in the making?
Yes.
It's an interesting headline. So what's what are we? And these are all food related Guinness.
Yeah. So in Syracuse.com reported on two guys in upstate New York who want to try breaking the Guinness World Record for largest charcuterie board, which is a record that exists and has already been set by people actually here in Chicago.
Is that right?
Yes. It was about 150 feet long, and the record, I think, was set just this last year. And so these two guys in New York kind of want to pay homage to their the New York food scene outside of New York City. Like, there's a great food scene in the rest of the state.
Yeah.
So they want to try besting the record, and since they're from the 315 area code, they want to do a 315-foot-long charcuterie board.
Oh, oh, my God.
Like about the length of a football field, almost.
So the current, yeah, almost. So the current record, again, you said is 150 feet.
Yeah.
And it held over 400 pounds of food.
Yes, it was sponsored by Boar's Head, as you might imagine.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. Wow.
But the Guinness committee has really strict guidelines. It has to have a certain amount of cheese on it. I think it's, what is it, five types of cheese, two types of meat, fruit, dried fruit, and fruit spreads to qualify as a charcuterie board.
Is that right?
Yeah, you can't just slap a bunch of mozzarella sticks and salami on there and call it a charcuterie board.
Yeah, no, you got to take it seriously.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So when are they going to do this?
It's going to be in September in conjunction with a local food festival.
Okay. So in conjunction, these guys are going to prepare a three. How much money is that going to cost? They have to get a sponsor, right?
They'd have to, I think.
A 315-foot long?
Yes.
No.
Loaded up with more than 400 pounds of food.
Yeah.
I don't even know how they're going to build the board because it has to be one board. So maybe they'll find ways to joint it or something.
Yeah. Wow. Boy, but Guinness, you know, whenever I talked about the Guinness World Records, it's always so weird.
Yes.
They have some of the strangest stuff in the Guinness World Record in the world, not just food stuff, which we're going to talk about here. Other food-related, food-centric world records. But some of the, I mean, some people, you know, like setting, like for bouncing a basketball, like how many times can you bounce a basketball?
Exactly. And as long as you apply and get eyes on what you're doing, you can make a record out of almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like you said, bouncing a basketball, who would think like, oh, I could set a world record for this?
Right. Well, you know, Gordon Ramsay had a show called The F Word. The British version was better, but they did a version on Fox because Fox is the Gordon Ramsay network. But anyway, and they would break a food world record every episode. So they had a person from the Guinness.
Oh, wow.
They had a person from the Guinness and somebody there in the restaurant, because it took place in his restaurant, which was the set. It was a great show.
That's really high stakes.
Yeah. Well, I think it was a set, but it was like made to look like one of Gordon's restaurants. So, obviously very entertaining stuff. And they would have celebrities on all the time, like dining in the restaurant.
Of course.
And there would be a challenge that the kitchen would have to do. And he would check in. Like, there were two separate kitchens that were serving the same dinners. And whoever served more and with more consistency would win. Mm. You know, so these two kitchens were in competition. So anyway, they would do these. I'm trying to think of what records that they broke, but
and they really did break some.
They did, and
wow.
they had the guy from Guinness there, you know, with the clipboard, the whole thing, and to make it official.
Wow.
And they would do it. They would do one of those every episode.
That's a lot to imagine as a producer of the show.
Yeah. Well, I was very sad that Fox didn't bring it back, because the British version was fantastic. It was on BBC America, and it was called the F word. And, you know, obviously it's got double meaning because it's Gordon Ramsay, but it means food.
The food word.
Yeah, it's exactly, you know, because but when you think Gordon Ramsay, you do think the other F word.
Yes, you do.
I don't know. It's funny. I've mentioned this several times. I love Gordon Ramsay. I love him.
What do you love about him?
Well, first of all, in Dublin, I went to one of his restaurants, and the food was great.
Mm-hmm.
I love the screaming. I think he's a great chef. I've watched a lot of his food shows, because the stuff on BBC America is less yelly, you know, and it's more it's actually more cuisine related.
Sure.
And he cuts down on this. He screams a little bit, but nothing like when he's on Fox. He's just, that's the whole selling point, is him yelling.
And the producers might have told him to just play that up.
Oh,
you know?
No question about it. No, this is America,
right.
You know, but in BBC America, his shows on BBC America were much more about the cuisine.
Huh.
And his cooking and his restaurants and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And they were fun shows too. But the F word was one of my favorites.
Maybe they'll reboot it someday.
Yeah, that'd be nice. But I mean, I watched 24 Hours to Hell and Back.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with 24 Hours to Hell and Back?
No.
Okay. It's basically, you ever watch Bar Rescue?
Yeah.
Okay. It's Bar Rescue with a restaurant.
Oh, okay.
You know,
sure.
And I mean,
or like Restaurant Impossible.
Exactly.
Okay.
And every show is exactly the same. Gordon shows up. There's the family's all angry. There's about to be a divorce. The restaurant, the kitchen is disgusting.
Yep.
The food sucks. Everything is, you know, and the decor is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have all the conflict. You get Gordon yelling at people, you know, the staff fighting back and all that stuff. And every episode, exactly the same. And then, of course, at the end, the restaurant was beautiful. The food is better. Everybody's happy. And he reunited a married couple.
I think the redesign of the restaurant is always my favorite part. Because, or the menu, too, because it's fun watching them learn how to become different types of chefs.
Yeah.
You know?
I like it. I think one of my favorite things is because they bring in a bartender too.
Oh, cool!
To help with, like, especially on Bar Rescue, they bring in like a fancy bartender for some dump, and and then force these poor people, these four bartenders who just basically pour beer and shots,
right?
To learn all these ridiculous drinks with umbrellas and fruit in them, and you just see these people going, what are we doing?
Well, you're creating a drink that you can charge a lot more for.
That's what you're doing. That's exactly right. Okay, we've got. I want to talk more about these because you have more Guinness records here, food related, and they're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marnie Scherr is with us, editor in chief of The Takeout. 312-981-7200. The Nick DeGiglio Show continues right here on WGN.
In a little cabaret in a South Texas border town, sat a boy and his guitar, and the people came from all around, and all the girls from there. We're slipping away from home and putting jewelry in hot to take a trip to go and listen to the little dark-haired boy who played the Tennessee flat-top box and he would play.
Nick DeGiglio, I love this song, by the way. Nick DeGiglio Show continues on 720 WG, and we're live in the Skyline studio on a Thursday morning. Marnie Scherr is with me. From The Takeout, editor in chief, Marnie. Thanks for hanging out.
Oh, absolutely.
On a late night, early Thursday.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about Guinness World Records in about food-related Guinness World Records. If you want to jump in with a talk or a text on any of this, it's 312-981-72. Also, if you want to text in or your favorite brand of popcorn, we would love to hear from that since we did a popcorn test. So there are a couple of guys who want to put together a charcuterie board that is 315 feet long. That's what they're going to do, and they're going to try and attempt it in September.
Yes.
So there are other food-related world records, including the largest annual food fight.
Yes, I believe 40,000 people were involved.
What it says. It was in Spain in 2013.
One of our commenters on the website actually said that they were there
really?
For that food fight. And they said, hey, I didn't know I was a world record holder.
Oh, what, they were in the food fight?
Yeah, they were part of it.
Wow. By the way, I'm in the Guinness World Book of Records.
What?
I am.
For what?
My old buddy Esmeralda Leon, who used to do traffic here on the overnights with me, we didn't know each other then when it happened, but we were both part of the Guinness World Book of Record.
Oh my gosh!
So here's what it was. You know, they show in the summertime. This was when every Tuesday in the summertime they would show outdoor movies at Grant Park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you would go bring your blanket, bring your wine, or whatever. We weren't supposed to drink in the park, but. So we would go every my ex and I would go every Tuesday. We would go, and one of those Tuesdays, they showed Duck Soup, the fantastic Marx Brothers, one of the greatest movies ever made. And so we went, and while we were there, they were handing out Groucho glasses to the entire crowd,
like with the nose,
yeah,
and everything.
The nose and the mustache. So they had all these Groucho glasses, and at the time, they were performing Animal Crackers at the Goodman. So they had the guy who played Groucho there, and he was on stage in front of the screen talking about it. And they announced that they wanted to break a Guinness World or set a Guinness World Record for most people wearing Groucho glasses in one place.
That's delightful.
And so we got our Groucho glasses, and I didn't know Esmeralda back then, but we're both part of the people. We were there when they wow. set the world record for most Groucho glasses in one place.
And I can't imagine that record has been or will be broken.
Yeah, I can't remember how many people were there, but it was Grant Park and it was packed.
Oh yeah.
And so but I don't know I'd have to look it up to know what the exact number of how many, but where all of us were there, man, where there's a whole bunch of people outside. We took a bunch of pictures too of like there's thousands
sure.
of, there's a ton of people just wearing Groucho glasses.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So all right, how about this largest packaged food word?
Yeah, so that's like a bit of a stretch, right? It's basically the largest assemblage of packaged foods that form a word when you step away from them and look at them. And it was, what word was it even? It was
free.
Right, because it was like a calorie-free food and a sugar-free food. Some, I don't know.
So they basically put food packages together to form the F, the R, the E, and the E.
Yes, and when you look at the photo online, I'm sorry, it's not particularly impressive looking. It's just the word free. It uses over 1,000 packages of this cookie product.
It says 1,111 packages.
But the people standing in front of it, you know, it's a little bigger than a human.
Okay.
So, you know, but it's a record. That's what matters.
Okay. All right. Well, let's see. And it was in Hong Kong in 2018. All right. How about longest fruit snack?
Yeah. That I had to look at the photos of, which are all available on the Guinness site as well. But I couldn't picture what a long fruit snack would look like. It appears to be more like one of those fruit leathers that you see at the grocery store.
Like a fruit roll-up?
Yeah, like a fruit roll-up.
Mm-hmm.
And there were kids just chowing down on it, which is great.
And it was 91.44 meters.
That's as long as I want my fruit by the foot to be every time I eat one.
Exactly. And that was in Canada in 2011. Those crazy Canadians.
What will they do next?
What are they going to do? Largest cookie mosaic.
That was a rather stunning portrait of a, I believe, a Japanese diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
And the cookies formed a really striking and very recognizable photorealistic image.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, we can check out these pictures online because I do want to see these things.
Mm-hmm.
It measured 318.85 square meters,
which you can't imagine how somebody dreams this up and then executes on it.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then that was in Japan in 2018. All right, how about this? Someone Someone has the record for most bagged lunches assembled in 3 minutes.
Yes, it was to advertise a better way to pack a child's lunch. I don't know if it was promoting the health of the lunch or the efficiency for moms, but it was part of a promotional event. And I believe 9 meals were assembled in 3 minutes.
That's
which,
what it said. 9 bags, yeah.
I don't know if that includes actually making any element of the food, like making the sandwich or
right.
something, but I would assume it would, because if you're just throwing stuff in a bag, you could pack more than nine.
Absolutely. Yeah. I would imagine, you know, I included a sandwich.
Probably like a sandwich.
A milk.
An apple
cookie, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was Vanessa Lachey is the one who, nine bags she did. And this was right here in America in 2019. All right, largest cream-filled biscuit.
Well, and of course, what they're really saying is largest Oreo,
yeah.
right?
You yeah.
know, you can't always say it, but the pictures of this Oreo are stunning.
Is that right?
I've never seen more of a cream-filling center in my life. It goes beyond double stuff, mega stuff.
Yeah.
It's just an absolute kiddie pool of filling.
That's crazy. Marnie Scher is here. It's Nick DiGilio show on 720, continuing editor-in-chief of The Takeout. We're talking about some food-related Guinness records. So largest Oreo weighed 73.4 kilograms.
Yeah. Which is like, what, 150 pounds or something?
Yeah. Wow, that's nuts. I got to say, I'm glad that these the Oreo Thins are out.
You are?
Yeah.
You might be the only one.
Yeah. I'm not a big, I don't like the double stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't like the double stuff. Look, Tom's looking at me like I'm nuts.
I think I'm looking at you that way, too.
I know. Most people right now listening are probably going, what's wrong with this guy? But I like the Thins.
You know what else they have Thins in now? They're doing a York Peppermint Patty Thin and a White Chocolate Reese's Thin.
Ooh.
So if you like the better ratio of chocolate.
Well, I like my peppermint patties big.
Yeah.
That one I'll go with. I'm not as crazy about the cream filling. As mm-hmm. It's just, and I know it's weird. As soon as the Thins came out, I was like, oh. And evidently it's an item that's specifically for me and nobody else.
You're keeping them in business.
Yeah. I always thought the double stuff was way too much.
Ugh,
I know. Everybody, like I said, you listening at home, you're like yelling at the radio right now, what is wrong with DiGilio?
That reminds me, not what is wrong with DiGilio, but the Oreos part.
Right.
On The Takeout, there's an article where we take all the cream fillings from an entire pack of Oreos and put them between two Oreo cookies.
Oh, come on.
And the pictures are unbelievable.
Oh, man,
so
come on. Is that on the website?
Yes, I encourage you all to check it out on thetakeout.com.
That's hilarious. That's great.
It's towering.
Tom, you would love to eat that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Because he looked at me like I was nuts when I said I don't like the...
That's the best part.
That's un-American.
Now, let me ask you this. Do either of you twist the thing and then scrape off the cream?
It depends on my mood.
Really? Tom, yeah. You do that?
Yeah, there was one time I kind of did what they did, the takeout, but I didn't stack it between two Oreos. I just scraped like an entire package of Oreos. Just scraped all the cream into a bowl.
You just got to be kidding me.
And I would dip the cookie into the cream bowl.
You're nuts.
Hey, I told you my story about the spider and the centipede yesterday. You know, it's as you said, starved for entertainment is what I am.
All right. Well, there you go. And then the largest showcase of chocolate dresses.
That
what?
I want to learn so much more about how these things were made, but there were 23 dresses at a fashion show made of chocolate. The models wore them. I have no idea how they kept them from being melted by just body heat.
Yeah.
They must have been put on well frozen.
So there was 23 outfits, and this was in, of course, France.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
And it was the Salon du Chocolat.
All right. There it is. So there's some records in it. And I really have to see this picture of the Oreo that you guys did.
Oh, yeah.
I have to check that out.
Definitely.
Oh, man. That's crazy. So I'm sure, Tom, that people are texting in that I'm an idiot for not enjoying the cream filling.
Actually, in fact, 630 says, I love the thins too.
There you go.
What?
There you go. There's at least one other person on this planet that likes the thins more.
I knew there was a reason they were still on the market.
Yeah. All right. How about this? 773 sends in a text that says, we did it for people who are just tuning in. We did a popcorn taste test a little bit earlier. And what was the winner again?
Angie's Boom Chicka Pop.
That's right. Angie's Boom Chicka Pop was the best microwave popcorn, salted. You know, it was perfect amount of butter, salt. Beautiful, and it's good. And actually, Tom's, you know, he's eating it right now as we speak.
I'm glad it's not going to waste.
Yeah, but anyway, the 773 says, I grew up on Jolly Time and Popeye's white popcorn kernels.
Popeye's?
I don't know Popeye's. I know Popeye's cereal, which came in bags. Did you remember Popeye's cereal?
No. Was Popeye's the brand or the type of cereal?
The brand.
Okay.
And it was because I used to work at the Jules.
Okay.
And this is a long time ago, so I don't know if the item is still available, but it was always a pain in the neck because when you would stock cereal, you know, they would you know how cereal is on the how it looks on the grocery shelf. All of a sudden, they're in the middle of the cereal aisle. There's these two bins that you would have to fill with bagged popcorn.
Yeah.
With bagged cereal.
Yes, exactly. And you have to make sure they don't puncture.
Yeah. So, like, right in the middle. And aesthetically, it was just not pleasing. Because if you look and you see all the boxes of popcorn, it looks really nice. And suddenly, here's a couple of bins with bags of Popeye's cereal in it. Because I think they had, like, Popeye's regular and then Popeye's light or something. I can't remember.
Well, now I have to check whether that's available at the store still.
So, Popeye's cereal or white popcorn?
Both.
Yeah.
Well, the white popcorn, it looks like it was literally like Popeye the Sailor.
No, yeah. That's what the cereal was, too.
I can see right now.
Not Popeye's. You were thinking chicken?
No. I guess I was just thinking of a totally unrelated Popeye.
No. The cartoon character, Popeye.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at a picture of it. It appears to be a pretty old tin, but yeah, Popeye brand, white, hull-less popcorn.
Huh. All right, that doesn't make any sense. Cereal popcorn, but no spinach.
Exactly.
They didn't have a Popeye's spinach. Did they have Popeye's spinach?
I think I've bought Popeye's spinach from Jewel before
because I know Phyllis Diller had a spinach.
Well, she had a chili.
That's right, she had a chili. Phyllis Diller had a chili. We discovered that.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
is it still around?
No.
Oh, okay.
But the visual is fantastic.
Oh, I bet
because there's like a character of Phyllis Diller on the back going. Wow! You know, All right. We have to break here. By the way, 773 says that they used to eat that. They grew up on that, but now they eat the white kernels from Mariano's.
Oh, nice to try those out.
Yeah, try that out. Okay, we're talking with Marnie Shore. More food stuff to talk about here. She's from the Takeout on 720 WGN. Let's and we shall return.
Galveston, oh Galveston. I still hear your sea winds blowing. I still see her dark eyes glowing. She was 21 when I left Galveston. Galveston, oh,
another great song. 312-981-7200. We're live in the Skyline Studio. It's the Nick DiGilio Show here until 4 o'clock. Classic stand-up at 2:30 as we do every morning. This is as classic as it gets. Straight from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which you can see on Antenna TV, the legendary Richard Pryor. And this is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, so we're going to pay tribute to him. And Marnie Shore is here. Hi, Marnie.
Hello.
Editor-in-chief of The Takeout. We were just talking about cereal, and someone just sent a picture. Working at the Jewel now, we currently carry the Malto Meal brand bagged cereal.
Ooh.
That sounds good. Well, he just took a picture of the cereal section, and there's a lot of bagged cereals.
Well, now that I'm, you know, an adult paying for my own cereal, I want the value that the bagged cereal offers because I can finish a box in one sitting, frankly. I think that the bag is just like more for less money.
Yeah, these are all Malto Meal different. These are all different brands or different flavors from Malto Meal. There's Frosted Flakes flavored. There's Mini Spooners, Honey Nut Scooters.
They have better names, too.
Let's see. What is this? Golden Puffs. These are all Malto Meal products.
I love Frosted Flakes, but I would change brands just to pay a lot less.
Yeah, for malto meal. And yeah. I'm looking at this. The current sale at Jewel, I'm like, he said, you just took a picture of the shelf. It's buy one, get one free. So you might want to...
I got to run over there.
Might want to get to your Jewel. Do we know this is a 708 area code? Do we know where his Jewel is?
Well, I grew up in the 708, and so I have a few ideas of where it might be.
Okay. All right. So he works at the Jewel. Man, that's bringing back memories at 1:37 a.m. because I used to work the overnight shift at Jewel. And
fun
just
stuff.
Just looking at stocking shelves at 1:30 in the morning. I don't know how many times I've done that. But anyway. All right. So bagged cereal available everywhere. Thank you, listeners. 312-981-7200. All right. Flippy, the fast food robot, made the news a little while ago.
Yes.
People were concerned that Flippy was going to take over people's jobs because Flippy can flip burgers and prepare fries and stuff like that.
Flippy can technically do it all. It's a matter of how well he does it.
Right.
I look at me trying to assign personality to a robot, how it does it.
Yeah.
but Flippy is a robotic mechanical arm, and it debuted either last year or 2 years ago. The company has been around since 2016, but
yeah.
Flippy can flip burgers, and a lot of people were watching the robot do this at its burger fast food location, and it just took a lot of strange pauses while flipping, and just in such a way that it was not more efficient than a human and not as fluid, and so it kind of messed up on its first day on the job. But Flippy is now back, new and improved, and is starting to be rolled out. I believe Flippy is installed at Dodger Stadium. So
Flippy is at Dodger Stadium,
and so it's only a matter of time before more restaurants figure out, like, this might be a nice way to supplement the workforce, you know, by having a tireless machine help out.
Yeah, I don't like that.
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable to think that our work can be outsourced in that exact way.
Yeah. And Flippy's just weird looking, too.
Yeah. Flippy does not look like the robots that you'd see in a cartoon or pop culture.
Right.
It's,
no.
It's just a soulless arm.
Yeah. Flipping burgers. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like Flippy.
You sound upset.
I'm anti-Flippy.
yeah, Flippy... you know, hopefully that Flippy never gets better at what we do than us.
Yeah, well, that's always the problem. But you know what? The machines are good. I've seen Terminator 2. The machines, Skynet is a real thing.
It's too late.
Did Flippy come from Skynet? Did Skynet make Flippy?
Oh, no.
Do we know who made Flippy?
Flippy is a product of a company called Miso Robotics.
Miso Robotics.
And they test it in a fast food restaurant that they themselves own and operate. So it's
sort of like
a testing ground.
Yeah.
So it's impossible to tell what this would look like if it was installed in a McDonald's or Burger King kitchen. But for now, Flippy is tirelessly working away, trying to impress people.
Did Flippy have to wear a sanitized hat?
And a little glove to flip the burgers?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah. It's funny because I used to, in addition to working at Jewel, I worked at McDonald's. I think every teenager at some point works in a fast food place.
Yeah.
You ever work at a fast food place?
I did not. I worked at like a UPS store type thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Still customer service in a way.
Thomas, why are you laughing at the UPS store?
I don't know. I think UPS stores are a strange place.
It's a strange place where people are not their happiest all the time.
No. I would imagine. Yeah, I would imagine you had to deal with some pretty bad customer
luckily
complaints.
Only a few.
Yeah. Well, when I worked back in the day when I worked at McDonald's, and this was like the early 80s when I worked at McDonald's, we had to wear these terrible polyester, you know, uniforms.
Mm.
Brown. Terrible. And the name tag, and we used to have to wear the paper hat, and it had to be, you couldn't have it back on your head. You had to be straight. It had to be in the middle of your forehead.
Just catching all the sweat.
And I go to a fast food joint now, and they don't have to wear any of that crap.
No, I think they just have to wear the aprons now, right?
Yeah.
And maybe hats. I know Starbucks requires hats.
They do. There are hats, I think, at most. But these are like they're hats.
Right.
They're not
real
the ridiculous paper hat that we had to wear. And then, you know, when I worked at Jewel, we had to wear, we couldn't wear jeans. We couldn't wear gym shoes.
Even on the overnight shift? When no one was around?
You know what? No, not in the overnight shift. But because I worked during days as well.
Oh, okay.
Because I worked there for a bunch of years. Mm-hmm. And, but there was like this dress code. You had to have a tie. You had to wear a tie.
Wow.
And an apron. You ever see what people are wearing now at Jewel?
No.
No, it's nothing.
I mean, it's not a tie. I never expect that out of people. I feel bad when people have to wear the whole suit.
Oh, I know. No. The whole, and we had to have a tie, had to have this, and it was an eight. We had the apron and everything. My dad works at Jewel. Mm-hmm. He bags groceries there, and it's just a shirt. It's just a Jewel. It's like a Jewel shirt and the name tag, and that's it.
That seems to make more sense.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I worked at these places during the wrong period of time. So are they looking to really expand Flippy?
I think they are, because they are selling it as a package to restaurant people as like a subscription. So you pay a couple thousand a month to operate Flippy in your kitchen.
So that would break it down to $3 per hour.
Yes.
$3. So that would definitely save a little money.
It would, unless, you know, it breaks down a lot and you've got to call a technician.
You've got to repair it. Yeah. I wouldn't trust it. Mm-hmm. I don't trust Flippy.
I want my tater tots hand dropped into the fryer.
Yeah, I don't need. I don't want that. I don't want a metallic taste to my tater tots.
That's
wow,
right.
Let's try that out. A little alliteration right there.
Metallic taste of tater tots.
Say that fast 5 times. See what happens. All right. So screw Flippy is the. All right. So we got more food. Related topics to talk about. Marnie Scher is here, editor-in-chief of The Takeout. If you have any comments, if you want to share your thoughts on some food-related stuff, or if you ever worked at a fast food place, 312-981-7200. Here, the Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN.
Someone knocking at the door, somebody ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door, somebody's ringing the bell. Do me a favor, open the door. I met a man, ooh yeah. Someone's knocking at the door, somebody's ringing the bell. Someone's knocking at the door, somebody's ringing the bell.
All right, Nick DiGilio here, continuing on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we're here till 4, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. So we were just talking off the air. Marnie Scher is here, editor-in-chief at The Takeout, a really great food website. We were talking off the air about Cheesies.
Cheesies Pub and Grub? Is
yeah,
that it?
Cheesies. And Tom used to work at Cheesies. But he worked at the one. I didn't even know there was one in it. I just thought there was only one. It was the one at Belmont and Sheffield.
Right. And that one is probably the most legendary, right?
Yeah. I would think so. I mean, I can tell you the number of times I was at the L&L.
Oh, yeah.
And then just walked
the
out. Walked right to Cheesies.
Oh, my gosh.
At like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes. The L&L, that was always my first or last stop of the evening.
When I was a drinking man, I loved that bar.
Yes.
I love that bar.
$2 PBR bottles.
Oh, please, man. Mm-hmm. The jukebox was fantastic. It was just, you know, and it was a dive.
Yes.
And it still is. It's still around, right? L&L is still around, right? It's got to be.
I mean, it was as of that. I went 2 years ago, and it was still alive and well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still there.
Of course it is. It's not going to go anywhere. L&L is not going to go anywhere. You could change that. You know, that whole area has completely changed, mm-hmm. you know? The Punkin' Donuts is gone. All that stuff is gone. But there's L&L, man. That's not going anywhere. And they probably
Have you guys ever been to Pick Me Up Grill or Pick Me Up Cafe?
Yes.
They're moving.
They
are moving.
Yeah.
They're moving to my neck of the woods.
Mine
are they?
Too. Very excited.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If they were any, luckily they were going to be over on Clark Street. So at least a 20-minute walk. Any closer would be a problem.
you worked at, what was the experience of working at Cheesy's like?
Well, it was at the risk of the owners being listening right now. It was a great experience.
Uh-huh.
It really was. No, we had a bunch of regulars and you learned how to make a variety of different sandwiches that you could bring on home. You mm-hmm. know, like the tenderizer, which has chicken tenders and barbecue sauce
yeah.
on it, or the nightmarish experience of learning how to make the El Jefe.
Yeah, I know that one.
What's that one?
Taco meat, jalapenos, like onions, all the taco stuff on the bread, and then you have to put that in a cheese quesadilla.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
It sounds like a joke, but it's very
No, it's real.
It's very real.
It sounds technically difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. We refused to make it for delivery. It was not allowed. If someone called in a delivery like, hey, can I get an El Jefe? The answer was no, because it would fall apart in the bag.
Yeah.
You guys were looking out for them.
That's exactly
right.
You're
doing them a favor.
It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Marnie Shore, editor-in-chief of The Takeout. Another piece that you guys wrote about. This is a headline right here. Peeps are the latest food you can stick on your feet.
Yeah.
And we're coming up on Easter.
We are.
And peeps are out there now. You can't stop them. I think they're disgusting, quite frankly.
So I usually do too.
Yeah.
But they've been playing around with some funky flavors lately, and they made a, brace yourself, sour watermelon peep, and I actually love it.
Really?
I was not expecting to fall in love with peeps.
I've never had a flavored peep besides the peep flavor.
Yeah.
Just the yellow peep.
They're getting really clever with them these days, and they're going all sorts of crazy directions.
Yeah. Well, so now they're making shoes?
So Crocs is currently undergoing collaborations with a number of different brands. There are peep Crocs. I don't know if anyone's familiar with I think they're called gibbets, but they're the charms that you kind of put in the Croc. You see them on kids' shoes a lot, like little characters. Or
yeah.
They're little charms you stick in the little holes of the Croc.
Right, right, right.
And so they made the Crocs in Peeps colors, and then you can stick either the marshmallow chicks or the marshmallow bunnies in gibbet form.
Into the gibbets.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, but
I've seen a picture. It looks ridiculous.
It does. Maybe not as ridiculous as the KFC collaboration that Crocs did.
Uh-huh. I remember this. Tell everybody about this.
The charm that you can stick in those is a fried chicken, like a drumstick.
Right.
And it's on red and white striped shoes that look like the KFC boxes. It's a sight to behold, and I recommend that you go to thetakeout.com and take a look for yourself, because fast food fashion is something that we're reporting on more and more these days.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And what else? There's another one, In-N-Out?
Yes, In-N-Out designed a slip-on canvas shoe that looks, it's a little more subtle. It looks like the design on their drink cups, so it's got the little red palm trees and striped details.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice and subtle, still looks like a normal shoe. It doesn't have a big piece of fried chicken.
It doesn't have a piece of fried chicken sticking out of the top
yeah.
of it. And then Dunkin'
is making tracksuits, and on the back is stitched the slogan, glazed for days. It looks pretty sharp, I gotta say.
The prices range from $20 from a t-shirt or a beanie to $85 for the whole tracksuit.
I wonder if they've sold the whole tracksuit yet.
For $85, I don't know. I mean, that would be a little bit much for a gag gift.
I would think.
Yeah. Glazed for days. By the way, it's three Z's.
Yes. I don't know how
glazed
you pronounce that.
For days. And it's Snoop Dogg is responsible for that slogan?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. When he was behind the counter working at Dunkin' in the commercial?
That's right. And he's also their Beyond Meat representative.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's pretty cool. Get your Croc shoes.
Yeah.
Are they available now?
They are.
Peeps,
and
Peeps shoes.
I think they range from $39 to $49 for the Peeps. And then I think the KFC one is more in the $60 range.
$60 for the KFC shoes? Jeez.
Well, people will do anything for fashion.
Okay. 309 says, do you guys remember Sizzaline Bacon? I do.
Wait, what is it?
Sizzaline Bacon.
No.
I love this bacon. I used to eat it all the time when I was a kid. They stopped making it years ago. Yeah, Sizzaline isn't, I'm not sure if it was real bacon or if it was like, because it was Sizzaline, mm-hmm. meaning that it was a lighter bacon. There was less calories and less fat.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was actually a pork product or fake. I'm not sure.
I used to eat those bacos, like the little chopped bacon pieces.
Please.
And I only recently realized there was probably no bacon at all inside a bako.
I would put it on. I would drown a salad in
yes.
those things. Oh, man. Okay. And then finally, we've got a candy store that's a pharmacy. Now, here's the thing, though. I will say this. It's a pharmacy-themed candy store, and it's opening in Boston.
Yes.
Okay. But years and years and years ago, you would get candy at the pharmacy.
That's true. It's almost like coming full circle in a weird way.
Yeah.
This is a store called Happy Pills, and they're opening their first U.S. location in the north end of Boston.
Happy Pills.
And they're really leaning into the theme. So it's like a clinical white store. It's like fluorescent lit, and around the edges of the store there are these bulk candy bins.
Okay.
But you don't fill up a bag with your product the way that you would at any other bulk candy store. You are given pill bottles. You can choose
Like prescription bottles?
Yes. And I can't remember what the small one is called. The large one is called the Chronic. And you use those to buy the candy. And then you can customize the label on your pill bottle. So they're really leaning into this theme.
That's pretty funny. That's pretty funny.
I don't know how appetizing it is, but they're really committed.
Wow. So you go in, you get your prescription filled, and you walk out with Happy Pills.
Happy Pills.
And it's called Happy Pills. Is it opened already?
I believe it is. And the one they opened one in Spain before that's been around for a few years.
Okay. That's pretty funny. I think that's pretty funny. You go in and get your prescription bottle and your... And you get the label. You get to customize the label and everything. Now, let me ask you this though. Here's the main question. Mm-hmm. It's candy inside the pill bottle.
Yes.
But is the cap childproof?
Where you have to like push down and twist.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing to keep myself from eating too much
exactly.
of my candy.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to figure out how to open the damn bottle.
I would love that.
Nick was just in Walmart and bought a pack of Oreo Thins on your suggestion.
Wow.
Hope you didn't steer me wrong. So I inspired somebody to go into a Walmart and buy some Oreo Thins.
You might get a follow-up saying, what are you talking
What's
about?
What's the matter with you? Yeah, that's what most people were probably thinking. Is it how could DiGilio like the Thins and not the double stuff? Bonnie from Kenosha, I had to wear this at my first job at Burger King. I used to sing on the mic, too. So she would be singing on the mic. I can't aptly describe this thing. I'll just show it to you, Marnie. That's what she had to wear.
Wow. Okay. So we're looking at quite a loud ensemble.
Really loud ensemble and a giant weird striped hat.
Yeah. It almost looks like a hat that you'd buy from a Halloween store.
Yeah, no, it looks like a Halloween costume.
Yeah,
it does.
Wow.
Man, I wonder if people still have their old uniforms from their old jobs.
They absolutely should.
I should have kept my McDonald's.
The paper hat would have disintegrated by now.
Yeah, it would have disintegrated. And I maybe this, you know, because it's polyester, it's not going to disintegrate. That stuff's going to last forever.
That's right.
That polyester and cockroaches are the only things that are going to be left. But no, this thing is ridiculous.
That is unreal. It looks like a hoax.
Bonnie from Kenosha. I used to sing on the mic.
You got to make it fun for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, so really ridiculous outfits. This really does look like a Halloween costume.
We should definitely do a feature on the Takeout about the more ridiculous fast food uniforms that have existed.
I think that's a great idea.
That's inspiring.
I think that's a great idea. And it's not so crazy now. Now it's a little, you know, I know that there is a required uniform at many of the fast food places.
It's usually just like a shirt or a polo.
It's like a polo with a hat. What do they wear at Popeyes?
I think they just do the apron and maybe the shirt is orange.
Yeah, and the hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't remember.
Okay. Have you had the Popeyes chicken sandwich?
I have indeed. The line when I went wasn't too bad, but it was a high stress environment.
Oh, I bet.
Because I went back in August at the peak.
Oh God.
But it was a good sandwich.
It's a very good sandwich.
Yeah.
Have you tried the fish sandwich?
The new fish sandwich. Have you seen the commercials for it?
No.
Ooh, it looks good.
It makes sense that they're debuting it now during Lent.
They're debuting it now for Lent. Yeah, but doesn't it look great?
It tastes great.
Oh, you had it?
I had it.
Oh,
man. Buddy of mine, his dad owns a few Popeyes out in the suburbs.
Oh, wow. What was best about it? What did you like about it?
I don't know. It just, it tasted like actual fish, unlike the filet of fish.
Interesting.
I'm not trying to hate, but it tasted like a fish sandwich.
Yeah.
And it was a solid cut, too. A solid
No, it filet, looks, I
yeah.
mean, the commercial makes, I mean, the commercial make you drool.
Huh.
The commercial for this Popeyes fish sandwich, it will make you drool.
That might be my weekend plan.
Yeah. No. And it looks like a big hunk of fish, too.
Yeah.
So,
money's worth.
Marnie, always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for hanging out so late with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was fun eating popcorn with you, and everybody should check out thetakeout.com, and we'll have you back down again soon.
Sounds great.
All right, Marnie Schurer, editor-in-chief of The Takeout and The Nick DiGilio Show. I can't even say my name. The Nick DiGilio Show continues.
She complicated, left me anew to ride. She complicated. Complicated, left me a mule to ride. The train pulled out, I swung on behind. Crazy about a hard-headed woman of mine.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Show continues. We are live in the Skyline studio right here on 720 WGN. Our classic stand-up that we do. We do classic stand-up directly from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show. Again, you can see it on Antenna TV. The legendary Richard Pryor. We're going to hear from that. We're going to hear that right around 2:30. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Today marks the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death. As you just heard, we heard a little Blues Brothers right there. I loved John Belushi. I loved him. I started watching Saturday Night Live from the very first episode. I was 10 when Saturday Night Live premiered. And so for the years that he was on SNL, I loved him. Animal House, still one of my favorite movies of all time. Blues Brothers, I'm not as crazy about as everybody else is, but it's a classic. And Belushi went on to do a few more movies and was just he was a legend. And you know, at one point in his career, he had the number one movie in the country, he had the number one TV show, and he had the number one album. Briefcase Full of Blues from the Blues Brothers hit number one. Animal House was the number one movie, and Saturday Night Live was the number one late night show. And so he was on top of the world. So local boy, and that made him even more lovable. You know, you couldn't take your eyes off of him. I never had the chance to see him on stage at Second City. I don't know if anybody is old enough to have seen Belushi on stage at Second City here in Chicago, but if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. I can't imagine he didn't just, you know, from all accounts, by all accounts, as soon as he walked out on stage, it was over. Like he was like a bull in a china shop. And it was certainly that way on SNL. Yeah, he was a comedy hero of mine, without question. So, you know, and I was at the right age too. Like Animal House came out, I was 13 when Animal House came out. Completely inappropriate for a 13-year-old. My dad took me to see it the day it opened. I'll never forget it. We went to the Harlem Cermak Theater. My parents knew how obsessed I was with Saturday Night Live. By this point, Saturday Night Live had been on for 3 years. And I was obsessed with it. And so in the summer of 78, when Animal House came out, my dad immediately took me to see it. And I loved it, obviously. And I still love it. It's one of my favorite movies. One of my favorite comedies of all time. And I loved John Belushi. I loved everything about him. So 312-981-7200. We're going to pay tribute to John Belushi here. And we'll play some audio from some of the stuff that he's done. And we would love to hear from you. What was your favorite John Belushi role or movie or character? 312-981-7200. This is the original obit. Back in March of 1982, this is the New York Times. And here's what they say. John Belushi, the manic, rotund comedian whose outrageous antics and spastic impersonations on the Saturday Night Live television show propelled him to stardom in the 70s, was found dead yesterday in a rented bungalow in Hollywood where he had launched a film career in recent years. The 33-year-old actor was found by his physical trainer, William Wallace, in a bedroom of the small house Mr. Belushi rented from the Chateau Marmont Hotel, a famed hotel on Sunset Boulevard, favored by entertainers. The cause of death was not immediately determined. There was no indications of foul play or drugs on the premises, police said. A hotel security guard said that Mr. Belushi may have choked to death on some food, but a heart attack was not ruled out. So this is obviously very early on when they wrote this obit, because it was an overdose. It appears to be death by natural causes, says Lieutenant Dan Cook of the Los Angeles Police Department, who added the detectives were here found nothing to seem suspicious. He lived in New York. Mr. Belushi made his home in New York City and was in California to work on his latest movie project, Noble Rot, for Paramount. He had rented the two-bedroom, $200-a-day bungalow at least a month ago, but had not used it continuously and had returned about a week ago. Mr. Wallace found the actor's unclothed body lying on a bed shortly before noon and called the police after trying to resuscitate him. Mr. Belushi apparently had been dead for several hours before he was found. Later, a woman drove up in a red car owned by Mr. Belushi and was questioned briefly and released by police, who did not name her, but she was not Mr. Belushi's wife, Judith. Mr. Belushi, whose bulging belly, rasping voice, wild eyes, and lunatic portrayals of grunting samurai warriors and antenna-quivering killer bees, greasy luncheonette hash slingers made him a favorite on the television, and I was a member of Saturday Night Live from 75 to 79, and then he left for Hollywood. Since then, he had appeared in a number of films, National Lampoon's Animal House, 1941, Old Boyfriends, Continental Divide, and most recently, Neighbors. Teamed with Dan Aykroyd, one of his old sidekicks from Saturday Night Live, he also starred in The Blues Brothers, a movie based on the deadpan antics of a pair of white soul singers. A native of Chicago, Mr. Belushi got his professional start in an anti-establishment coffee house in Chicago in 1969, taking improvisational pokes at drug culture, the sexual revolution, and other contemporary going on. But his talents went largely unrecognized until Del Close, the director, brought him to the Chicago-based improvisational troupe known as Second City and encouraged him to take risks on stage. He was recommended for review. In 1972, a member of the editorial staff of the National Lampoon recommended Mr. Belushi for a part in Lemmings, a rock musical review that the publishers of the Zany magazine were assembling off-Broadway. The production got rave reviews, and instead of a six-week run, it remained on the boards at the Village Gate in Greenwich Village for 10 months through 350 performances. In 1975, Mr. Belushi was invited by Lorne Michaels, the producer, to join the unorthodox late-night NBC showcase that in its beginning was called Saturday Night, to avoid any confusion with the ABC show called Saturday Night Live with Howard Cosell. The stars included Chevy Chase, Jane Curtin, Garrett Morris, Lorraine Newman, Gilda Radner, and in addition to Mr. Belushi and Mr. Aykroyd. And after some shaky beginnings, it was a huge success, mounting uproariously funny skits as the not-ready-for-primetime players. Mr. Belushi became a favorite of the show, depicting a host of characters, including a weather forecaster given to digressions. He did Secretary of State Henry Kissinger and author Truman Capote. So, and then he went on to big movie fame and fortune and music and everything. Comedy hero of mine, no question about it. And so we're paying tribute to him. We got a couple phone lines open if you want to get in. If you want to text or talk, we're talking John Belushi on the anniversary of his death. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGiulio show continues.
All through the night, I'll be awake and I'll be with you. All through the night, this precious time, when time is new.
Nick DiGiulio show continues here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we're here until 4 o'clock. We'll have some classic stand-up coming up, as we do at 2:30 every morning. These are all taken from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, which, of course, you can see on Antenna TV. And we got a legend this morning. We're going to hear some stand-up from a Tonight Show appearance by Richard Pryor. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Today marks the 38th anniversary of the death of John Belushi. A huge loss to the world, and especially the world of comedy. He was one of my heroes, one of my comedy heroes. And we got some texts coming in. The phone lines are filled up here at 312-981-7200. We're paying tribute and remembering the great work of John Belushi. Canadian Bill says, one of my favorite Belushi movies was Continental Divide. Love the part where the cabin is torn apart by a mountain lion, and he is all beat up, and the cabin is demolished. Blair Brown comes home, and Belushi says, how was your day, dear? That was a really good movie. As I mentioned before, that was a movie when I was talking with Mr. Dan Feinberg. That was the movie that really showed that Belushi could probably not just do goofy comedies, because it was a really good role for him, and it was a romantic comedy, and it's not something that Belushi had ever done before. And it was his last movie, and it was Neighbors was his last movie with him and Aykroyd. But yeah. 309 says, I was devastated the day he passed. I cried like I'd lost family. I was really upset. I'll never forget how I found out. I was working at McDonald's, and I got a phone call. And I never got personal phone calls at work. And the boss says, Nick, you got a phone call. And I get in there, and it's my buddy from high school, Scott Fricke, who, of course, knew how much I loved Belushi. And he's like, I don't know if you know this or not, but John Belushi died. And I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. I couldn't process it. And so I immediately asked my boss if I could take my break because I needed to sit down and because I couldn't believe what I had just heard. I mean, he was one of my heroes. He's only 33 years old. And at that time, when I read that obit, people didn't know how he died. It hit me like a ton of bricks. I mean, it truly hit me like a ton of bricks. And I told my boss, I was like, I got to sit down. I got to take my break now. So I took my break. I had just started the shift, I think. And I was like, I got to take my break. And I had to say, I sat in the break room in the back of McDonald's, just, you know, thinking about the fact that one of my comedy heroes has just passed away at the age of 33. So we're going to talk about some of his iconic roles, including some of the great characters that he did on SNL and some of the great movies that he made, and sharing your memories at 312-981-7200. Here's Robert on WGN. Hi, Robert.
Morning, Nick. You know, I was very young. My dad took me with my older brother. We went to Second City, and the only thing I could... This guy comes out on stage, looks like he's having a heart attack, jumps off the stage, smashes a table, and gets up and goes, oh, got it. That's one hell of a beef. I mean, I thought he hurt himself.
Yeah.
Everyone else is in hysterics, so, you know... I don't know. He was brilliant. That's all you could say.
No, that's all you can say.
How do you throw yourself off of a stage, smash it, and it's not a set table. It was a regular table.
Right.
And then get up and go, yeah. Beef, you know.
Yeah. No, I mean, you were lucky to see him perform at Second City because that's basically how he got his start. And it must have been amazing.
You know, I was too young at the time,
yeah.
And I didn't really understand who he was until he hit Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was like, that's the same guy.
That's the same guy that threw himself in the stage. Table. Amazing. All right, Robert, thanks for sharing that.
All right, take care. Yeah,
he was a force of nature. Anybody who had ever worked with him, I mean, you could tell just by watching Saturday Night Live, you know, that, I mean, you couldn't take your eyes off of this guy. And, like, he was, like, as Robert just said, he would do anything on stage. And, you know, throwing himself off the stage and into a table, I'm not surprised that Belushi did that. And anybody who, by all accounts, anybody who's ever seen him, I used to talk with the great Roy Leonard. He saw Belushi at the height of his popularity on Second City and would just say, I've never seen anything like it. You know, and Roy had been to Second City 9 million times. Then his son eventually ran Second City. Kelly Leonard ran Second City.
Wait, Kelly Leonard is Roy's son?
Wait a minute. You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
I'm absolutely serious.
Wow,
he's his youngest son.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Kelly's a great guy.
He's amazing.
He's an amazing guy.
Yeah. He hired Tina Fey. He hired Rachel Dratch. Horatio Sanz. I mean, you know, the list goes on of the people that he brought in there, like personally. Mid-90s, it was all Kelly, and he was hiring early to the mid-90s, he was hiring everybody that you've seen on SNL or to go on to movies. Steve Carell, he hired Steve Carell. Colbert, he hired Colbert. I'm not kidding, man. When he ran Second City, he brought in some of the most talented people that have ever been in movies or TV or on stage at Second City.
I believe it. Well, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
But yeah, Roy was his dad.
I know it. Well, you know, he's got I believe he still does have a podcast here, Getting to Yes And.
Yes.
And some of my earliest shifts were working with Kelly.
Oh, you worked with Kelly.
Yeah, very, very briefly.
He's a great guy.
And I was just like, wow, this guy's got a great show.
No, he's brilliant. Yeah. He's brilliant. He's a great guy. And he started out washing dishes at Second City.
There you go.
And then he ended up running it.
What a guy.
Yeah. And hired, like I said, the people that he hired to be on stage at Second City are comedy icons. I'm not kidding. So I just named off a bunch of them. And that was all Kelly. Kelly hired all those guys.
Remarkable.
Yeah. But anyway, Roy would tell me stories of seeing John Belushi on that Second City stage. The Second City is not a big room, you know what I mean? And to have a guy come out and just completely annihilate the place. And then years later, Chris Farley did that. And I saw Chris Farley. I was training at Second City when Chris Farley was on the main stage, and I'd never seen anything like it. Everybody would say, it's nothing like this has happened since Belushi. He would tear it up. He would go nuts. Then he gets on Saturday Night Live, he gets a movie career, and he dies of a drug overdose at the same age as John Belushi, who was his hero. I think he took the hero worship a little too far. He lived his life like he wanted to be John Belushi, so he partied like John Belushi.
Fun fact, there's an Anthrax song about John Belushi.
There is?
Yeah, there's a song by the heavy metal band Anthrax.
Well, I know Anthrax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a song about, I think it's also, it's definitely in connection to Belushi, but also Chris Farley, I believe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I saw Anthrax a couple times. So I'm with P.E.
Rad.
It was amazing. Anthrax and P.E., they came back out and did Bring the Noise. Please. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about the great Jim Belushi. His brother is Jim, the great John Belushi, and some of his fantastic roles and his life, remembering him. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick, how's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, I have two things I want to mention about John Belushi. The first one, I remember when I was a kid, and this is the only time I saw this movie. I heard it was no one wanted to see this movie again. You remember Wired?
Of course, yeah. Michael Chiklis played him. Yeah.
Yeah, Michael, he did a good job. I was so shocked by a lot of people hated that movie and wanted to.
Here's the thing. The book was really exploitive. Bob Woodward wrote the book. And the family hated it. The Belushi family hated it. They disavowed it. They said it was all lies. And I read the book, and it was sensationalized. It wasn't very good. And when the movie came out, it was protested by a lot of people who were part of the Belushi family or big fans of Belushi because of the liberties that the book took. And there were flat-out lies in the book. And so that's why people were very upset about the movie.
Yeah, I don't blame him at all. I don't blame him. But, okay, I have the second one is I have two facts about John Belushi involving a Ghostbuster. Okay, the first fact, of course, he was the original choice to play Peter Venkman.
Right.
And then he died and Bill Murray took over. And, of course, the character of Slimer was modeled after him
right.
Because they wanted to make, because the way he was eating too much, they wanted to make him look like he was his spirit was on set. I thought that was a good touch to tribute to him.
Yeah. Very good. All right, Ike, thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, it would have been a much different movie if Belushi had played Venkman. And it was written for him, you know, because Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis wrote Ghostbusters, and they specifically wrote Venkman for him, and it would have been a completely different movie because, you know, Bill Murray is so much different in terms of tone and style than Belushi was. And so they did have to change Venkman's character because it was written, the original script for Ghostbusters, Peter Venkman's character was written for the personality of John Belushi. And so when Bill Murray came in, they clearly had to change that because, you know, the styles weren't even remotely close. So, you know, Peter Venkman became a Bill Murray character. But yeah, he was originally supposed to be in Ghostbusters. Okay, lots of people are on the line. Everybody hang on. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are remembering John Belushi. We're going to play some clips from some of the stuff from SNL and his movies. And it was 38 years ago today that he passed away. And he was a comedy giant. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to play some classic stand-up. Everybody hang on. And we'll get back to your calls and we'll get back to your texts and we'll get back to John Belushi. But we are going to play back our comedy stand-up that we take from The Tonight Show, The Johnny Carson Show, and we'll listen to a little Richard Pryor before we jump back into talking about the great John Belushi on 720 WGN.
Just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away.
Dean Stockwell singing Into the Light and Dennis Hopper crying from Blue Velvet. All right. Everybody hang on. Thanks for your patience. But every morning at 2:30, we play some stand-up from the Great Tonight Show, legendary episodes of the Johnny Carson Show. And we got speaking of giants in comedy is what we're talking about. This is the anniversary of John Belushi's death, so we're paying tribute to him. We're going to get back to that. Talk more about him, our favorite movies and roles, and play some audio, too. But it's time for some classic stand-up from The Tonight Show, and it can't get more classic than this. Do we know the year?
1974.
Whoa, okay. All right, this is early, then.
Yes.
Well, Richard Pryor actually got his start in the early 60s.
Yeah, was he on Steve Allen?
Yeah, he was on. He was on Steve Allen. He was on. Yeah. Why am I blanking on his name? Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, Ed Sullivan.
And he was a completely different. He had a tie.
Very clean.
Very clean. Yeah. He was patterning himself a lot after Cosby, and he clearly then when he just started talking about himself on stage, basically like doing open heart surgery on himself, which is what he was great at, it all changed. It'll be interesting to see him work clean. It'll be just see him to listen to this, because you can't go blue on The Tonight Show. And Richard Pryor was one of the bluest comedians of all time. So here's Richard Pryor, 1974, on The Tonight Show.
Hello. Hope I'm funny. I used to do stuff that was interesting, because I'm from Peoria, Illinois, and it would get kind of dull. And I'd go and hang out with the winos on Sundays, because they knew everybody, you know, especially they would speak to anyone, you know, Dracula, anybody. Yeah. Hey, boy, where'd you get that cape? You live around here? Who's your people? Why'd you get them teeth fixed? Blood dripping all out your mouth. Why don't you take care of yourself, boy? Either I go to the bars and watch fights. People love to fight when they get drunk. I used to watch them. Especially, they always want to fight Orwell. Orwell was a friend of mine that fought the police. I knew he was bad. Right? Because the police would do anything to you, right? You know, they move along, stop having so much fun. Orwell would stop that. Hey, man, don't push me with no stick, Mr. Officer. I'm Orwell, 6'5", weigh 235 pounds. Bring fire out my chest. I know you understand. You understand? Now, why don't you call downtown and ask about me, Orwell? Remember last summer when the 15 police come got that and 4 or 5 of them got messed up? That's me. Mess with me, I'm gonna bite you on the neck. And you always go to bars. When the guys get drunk, they started fighting. Some dudes would really get weird and want to fight women. Right? They always want to fight the women, right? They go, say, man, what you mean we can't have another drink? Well, we done spend money all night, chump. Tell me, don't hold me, man. Give me a drink, baby. Get a beer for the house. One beer. Woo! What's wrong with you, ugly woman? Well, ain't nobody messing with you. Turn your face around. I'm not. Who are you, chunk? I don't care if that's your mama. Wait a minute, baby. You didn't hit me. Same, man. No, don't hold me, man. Don't let me go. No, nobody hit me, baby. Nobody hit me and get away with it. Well, do something, baby. You done kicked me in the ass, man. Don't nobody kick me to get away with it, baby. I mean that. Freddie, please help me. Roll down the window, please. Put it up. It's too much air. Oh, Lord. I'll never do it again, Lord, please. Oh, Lord, please. Don't make me, Lord. There's nothing left to throw up, please. I ain't got nothing left but my manhood, please. Thank you, baby. You my man. I'm gonna get him. Kick me. I'm gonna kill him, baby.
Hey, mama! Hey, baby, open the door!
It's me.
What's happening, baby? What's wrong with you? I know my breath smell bad. I've been outside in the ballroom, baby, trying to defend your honor. You know, what's the matter? Why you mad at me? What was here in the glove compartment? I got that from a lady at the store, baby. My shopping bag, but I asked her to loan me a bra so I could carry the groceries on. That's right, you know I love you, baby. Help me get my clothes on. I'm crazy about you, baby. I'm gonna make love to you tonight, baby. You better believe it.
You know, it's fun to listen to, but to watch him physically, you know, to take on those characters. That was some of the best stuff he ever did was when he, because that character eventually became Mudbone. And, you know, coming home drunk, that was another bit that he would do a lot. He was the best. He was the best stand-up in the world. And that was 1974, before he really became incredibly famous. So, all right, there you go. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're paying tribute to John Belushi, and this is the anniversary of his death. And we've got some people on the line who want to talk about it. Here's Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah.
Well, it's not a very... good book, but it's a good read. His wife Judy wrote it. It's called Samurai Widow.
Yeah, I had her on the show twice.
Okay, well, it's a good read. I've let my little brother and little sister read it because they weren't around to know what it was like.
Right.
But it's amazing how he put those five movies into 4 years of his life.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he made a massive impact in the world of movies and television. And music with the Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
No question.
And, well, one little fact, I mean, you probably know it, but he was supposed to be slated as the cheesy guy in Neighbors.
They switched roles.
Yeah, they switched roles.
And
to me, that movie wouldn't be in it. Now, Belushi was that on a nerd was perfect.
Right. Okay, thanks, Steve.
Yeah,
have you ever seen Neighbors?
I have not had the opportunity.
It's a really weird movie. And they had lots of difficulty on the set. Belushi was way into coke at that point when they were making the movie. And they switched roles because Belushi plays the straight man in the movie. And Aykroyd plays the crazy guy. And it was originally they wanted Belushi to play the part that, you know, that you would naturally have him play. John Avildsen directed it, who was just a couple of years outside of Rocky. He had made, and he was the wrong choice, and they clashed constantly on the set. And the movie is interesting. It doesn't work. It's very, very strange, but it's interesting to watch. I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you run out and watch it, but it certainly is a piece of film history that it's just a very weird movie. But there are things in it that absolutely crack me up. And it's interesting to see Aykroyd play the character that Belushi normally would play, the type of character that Belushi normally would play, and then Belushi be the straight man. It bombed. It did okay at the box office, but it was critically the critics ripped it apart. But yeah, that was his last film. So here's Big Ed on WGN. Go ahead, Ed.
Howdy, Nick.
Hey.
Just a couple of seconds here. Wanted to talk about. This has to be out there on YouTube because I think that's where I saw it. Some guy affiliated with the movie was interviewing Belushi, and he would give him words, and Belushi would give him facial expressions. Like he'd say, you know, show me fear, and then he'd get this face.
Yeah.
Show me happiness. And he'd get, and the way his face would just, I mean, it would go into whatever this guy said. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, his facial expressions were one of his trademarks. If you ever go back and watch his audition for SNL, He does like a whole bit about moving individual eyebrows, because he could do each eyebrow movement up, and he does like another expression. And a big part of his audition for SNL was the physical stuff and the facial stuff.
And maybe you could tell the audience about Belushi, Bill Murray, and Chevy Chase.
Well, that was when Chevy Chase came back to host. And Chevy Chase, notoriously, anytime I've read every book that you can possibly imagine about Saturday Night Live, and every story about Chevy Chase is not flattering in the least. Like, he's known as a massive jerk, and it has been that way since his days. When he left Saturday Night Live, he turned into a massive jerk. He came back to host it. Bill Murray was his replacement. Bill Murray replaced Chevy Chase when he left. He came back to host. And he acted like a jerk the whole week that he was there, and so Bill Murray kind of almost got into a fight with Chevy Chase, because Chevy Chase made fun of him, and because he was the thing, and so they got into like a fist fight right before the goodbyes at the end of the show, and it was Belushi who encouraged Bill Murray to punch Chevy Chase, so it was like Belushi was like, "You hear what he said about you?" And he started telling Bill Murray that Chevy Chase said this and that about him, and then Chevy Chase went over and they got into, or Bill Murray went over and they got into a fight. And then you can see, if you watch the rerun, you can see they're trying to hold Bill Murray back as they're, because at the end of every episode of Saturday Night Live, the whole cast and everybody's out on the stage, and they say their goodbyes. So everybody's out there, Chevy Chase is saying the goodbyes, and you can see Bill Murray having to be held back from, going after Chevy Chase right on the stage and punching him in the mouth. But you can also see Bill. You can also see Belushi laughing, because it was all Belushi. So, yeah, good stuff. All right, Ed, thanks. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number here. We're playing tribute to the great John Belushi. So I got some weather for you. Cold front is going to move through the area, and we'll see some brief showers in the morning, followed by a cold air, triggering instability and showers later in the afternoon and evening. The clouds will increase the chance of morning showers. Middle 50s is what we're going to get to. It'll be cooler and cloudy overnight. Tomorrow, lakeshore flooding possible in northwest Indiana due to strong winds, gusting more than 30 miles per hour. A few morning clouds will exit, bringing in sunny afternoon skies. Temperatures between 40 and 45 and mostly clear overnight. For Saturday, flooding possible again. We'll see mostly clear overnight between, 40 to 45. Partly cloudy on Sunday, but much warmer, highs in the mid-60s. Clouds will increase with a chance of rain overnight. And then for Monday morning, rain becomes heavier by the afternoon with a chance of thunder. It'll be unseasonably mild, highs between 55 and 60. There'll be a shift in the overnight winds, and the rains will end at night. 35 degrees right now at O'Hare. It's 36 at Midway, 36 at the lakefront. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. As we continue, we're paying tribute to John Belushi. We've got some audio that we're going to be playing from some of the stuff that he's done, and talking more and our memories about the great John Belushi. 312-981-7200. The show continues.
Riding on the city of New Orleans, Illinois Central, Monday morning rail. 15 cars and 15 restless riders, 3 conductors and 25 sacks on mail.
All right. It's a Thursday morning Nick DiGilio Show, continuing here live in the Skyline Studio in downtown Chicago. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Today is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, and so we're paying tribute to him. We're going to listen to some audio from some of his movies and TV appearances. And I've got here an article from Legacy.com about some of his great roles, including stuff that he did on TV and in movies. So we're remembering John Belushi. 312-981-7200. Here's Tim on WGN. Hi, Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
I from Beloit, Wisconsin. I went to school at Whitewater, and I don't know the plays much, but looking down out of my dorm room at the ends of campus, and putting up this tent. It was a tent theater, so that weekend I went to see Glass Menagerie, and I never paid attention, and after a while when he got famous, and I had all this junk saved up, and I had the program there, and I looked it up, and yeah, he was in that show. and I saw him, and I've still saved that that program.
What role did he play in Glass Menagerie?
You know, I don't have it in front of me right now.
Okay.
And, you know, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
I'm an old person. Been listening to your radio station for 65 years.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to dig that thing out and send it to you, all right?
Oh, that'd be great, Tim. Thank you.
And, right. But I mean, like I said, I'm not, oh, I saw the movies, you know, I love the guy.
Yeah.
But as far as telling you about what he did and
yeah.
even how he did or something in Glass Menagerie,
yeah.
you know, I'm an idiot, you know?
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Tim.
All right.
Well, hard for me to picture John Belushi in the Glass Menagerie. Okay, here's the deal. We're gonna play some audio. We're gonna play part of the very first sketch that ever appeared on SNL. The late great Michael O'Donohue, who was also taken from us too soon. He was the first person to ever speak on Saturday Night Live, and the bit is he's like a speech therapist guy who was trying to teach English to this foreign guy, played by John Belushi. This was the first sketch that ever aired on SNL, and Michael O'Donohue wrote it, and so this was the first thing that ever appeared on Saturday. There's a little bit of that.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Let us begin. Repeat after me. I would like to feed your fingertips.
To feed your fingertips.
To the Wolverines.
To the Wolverines.
Next, I am afraid.
I am afraid.
We are out.
We are out.
Of Badgers.
Of Badgers.
Would you accept.
Would you accept.
A Wolverine.
A Wolverine.
In its place.
In its place.
Next. Hey, Ned exclaimed.
Hey, Ned exclaimed.
Let's boil.
Let's boil.
The Wolverine.
The Wolverines.
Michael O'Donohue was a twisted dude, man. He was a twisted dude.
I'm surprised the Badger line didn't get more laughs. I love that.
It's
out of Badgers. Will you accept a Wolverine in its place?
Again, I don't think people really, if you weren't around, people don't realize how revolutionary Saturday Night Live was. Nobody had ever seen anything like that, you know? And I'm sure people across the country are watching it going, what is this? What Wolverine's fingertip? What? but yeah, that was the very first sketch ever on SNL, and Belushi was in it. John Belushi passed away. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. John Belushi passed away today, 38 years ago, and we're paying tribute to him. Here's Glenn on WGN. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, good morning there.
Hey.
You know, I don't know why I keep on thinking, when I think of John Belushi, I keep on thinking of a short movie in the Saturday Night Live. I love those short movies they
yeah.
made where he's the old man walking through the cemetery, and he's passing at each headstone. And he comes up to Chevy Chase's and says, yeah, he went to Hollywood and he died. You know?
Yeah, well, the ironic thing about that film, and if you watch it now, it's bittersweet because
I know,
he's the only in that sketch, he's an old man, and he's the only surviving member of the cast. And he was the first one to go.
I know, and that's the one sad thing about it, but,
yeah.
you know, it's still funny, but it's
oh
like,
no,
yeah,
it's great. It's hilarious. Yeah. And it's brilliant.
But yeah, you're right. Every time you see it, it's like,
yeah,
he was the first one to go.
He was the first one to go. Yep. Okay. Thanks, Glenn.
Hey, have a nice morning.
All right, man. Okay. So here's another legendary moment. We got to play this. This was an Olympic. This was like a Wheaties takeoff commercial where he was like an Olympic athlete. Well, let's just people will remember this, and I'll explain it if they didn't. Here we go.
John Belushi is on his way to a gold medal in the decathlon. They're setting the bar at 7 feet. Here's his approach. And he got it! What a day for John Belushi!
I logged a lot of miles training for that day, and I downed a lot of donuts.
Little chocolate donuts. They taste good, and they've got the sugar I need to get me going in the morning. That's why little chocolate donuts have been on my training table since I was a kid.
Little chocolate donuts, the donuts of champions.
Yeah, and he's also smoking. He's also got a lit cigarette in his hand as he's eating the donut. And obviously John Belushi was not in Olympic athlete shape, but that's very funny. Little chocolate donuts. So John Belushi passed away 38 years ago today. If you want to jump in with a talk or text at 312-981-7200, your favorite John Belushi. I've got this article here from Legacy mentioning his best characters, his greatest roles. Joe Cocker is the first one they mentioned. John Belushi's impression of Joe Cocker was an early career catalyst, with Belushi performing it circa 1971 with Chicago's Second City. A National Lampoon magazine staffer caught wind of his energetic, slightly deranged impression and visited Chicago to see it. He was so impressed that he offered Belushi a job with the Lampoon's Lemming Show in New York. And anyone who hasn't seen Joe Cocker's live performances would be excused if they brought Belushi's performance. They thought it was a little strange. But those who can't stop laughing at Belushi's bizarre, dead-on take. And I know that one of the more memorable moments on SNL involved Joe Cocker actually performing next to John Belushi as John Belushi did an impression of him. It's one of the most, you know, sort of favorite and repeated bits in Saturday Night Live history. And the fact that Joe Cocker had, you know, a good enough sense of humor to just perform next to Belushi, it's funny, but it's also a little uncomfortable to watch. But it's a classic moment, one of the most classic moments in the history of that show. Samurai Fatuba is if Belushi's Joe Cocker impression got him to New York, setting the stage for him to audition SNL, it was the Samurai who actually got him the gig. Lorne Michaels knew about Belushi but was reluctant to hire him. He thought Belushi was too loud and abrasive for his brand new variety show. Belushi got an audition anyway and trotted out a new character he'd been working on, dressed in an old bathrobe, hair in a ponytail, and a makeshift sword in his hand. Belushi grunted and shouted Japanese-sounding gibberish at the audience. He was a scream, and even Michaels had to admit they loved it, and Belushi got the job. And the rest is history. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Comedy legend John Belushi passed away on this date 38 years ago. And we want to hear from you. What are your favorite Belushi characters and movies and moments and stuff like that? 312-981-7200. The show continues. Nick DeGilio show continues here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're remembering John Belushi. This is the 38th anniversary of his passing. I mean, it's hard to believe it was 38 years ago. He was a comedy giant, one of my heroes, and it's a tragedy that he passed away. He was only 33, so we're remembering some of the best John Belushi roles and movies and moments. Before the break, We talked a little bit about the character he played, Pete, in the Olympia Cafe cheeseburger, cheeseburger, cheeseburger sketches that were so classic. And we have a little bit of that.
I have a couple eggs and a couple eggs, sausage. Is that the Link sausage or patty? Link sausage. Eggs over lightly, a large orange juice and coffee. Thank you.
Cheeseburger?
No, I don't want a cheeseburger. Eggs, couple of eggs, and over lightly with sausage. Cafe? Cafe?
No, eggs. Cheeseburger.
When you stop serving breakfast?
No breakfast.
No breakfast?
Nope.
All right, I just want a couple of eggs.
No breakfast. Cheeseburger, huh?
Just got up. I don't want a cheeseburger.
Come on, come on, come on. Don't give me that. Come on, let's go, let's go. We got to have turnover. We want a cheeseburger? Come on, everybody get a cheeseburger. You want a cheeseburger? Come on, cheeseburger.
I don't want a cheeseburger. It's too early for a cheeseburger.
Too early for a cheeseburger? Look. Cheeseburger, 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 cheeseburger,
cheeseburger.
I'll have a cheeseburger.
By the way, that's the great Robert Klein in that sketch. It's still funny, man. It's still funny. All right, some more of the great characters that John Belushi has played, the great roles. We want to hear, what are your favorite John Belushi memories or moments? And 312-981-7200. Where were you when you found out, if you're old enough, where you found out where he was? Where were you when you found out he passed away? Like I said, I was working at McDonald's. My friend Scott called me. And said, hey, man, John Belushi passed away. And then I had to, like, sit down for a moment. And next role that they love here in Legacy is Ludwig von Beethoven. His Beethoven was hilarious. One of dozens of celebrity impressions Belushi performed on SNL. It's among the most memorable. Belushi's Beethoven starts out staid and completely deaf. He plinks gently on the piano keys until his visitors leave him, at which point he snorts a bit of cocaine, puts on dark sunglasses, and confidently offers up a blues riff. As he starts to sing, he morphs into a Beethoven/Ray Charles pastiche, gleefully mimicking Charles' mannerisms while he sings. And he gains goofy backup singers, too. Like much of Belushi's SNL work, it's random, goofy, and unforgettable. Have you ever seen him do? You've seen him do Beethoven, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, great stuff.
It's so funny.
Once I knew who Belushi was, and I started watching SNL a lot more,
yeah.
I went back and watched like a lot of the best of stuff.
Yeah.
Because those DVDs started coming out right when I was old enough to be watching SNL, and they released the best of Farley,
sure.
The best of Belushi, yeah. Like volumes 1 and 2, all this kind of stuff. So I was lucky enough that they started doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty. It's great stuff. And now, you know, I mean, SNL goes viral immediately. You know what I mean? Like a lot of people don't watch it on Saturday; they watch it at their office on Monday morning. Just go to YouTube and check out all the sketches because they're out there.
That's how I was watching it because Andy Samberg started when I was back in like what 2004, 2005 somewhere in there,
somewhere around that area,
somewhere around
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
and they start and Lazy Sunday. Oh my God!
Well, man,
YouTube had just become a thing.
No, that was,
and we were going crazy.
Was truly revolutionary. Lazy Sunday was truly, but you know that's not the first digital short.
No, it's is it
lettuce?
Yeah,
lettuce is the first one. But that was the second one, and that was it. Yeah, I remember the impact that Lazy Sunday made. That's why people are. I mean, to this day, that's one of the reasons why people watch SNL. That's why NBC puts the content out there immediately. Because you trace it all the way back to Lazy Sunday,
and the huge mistake they made of taking them all down because it was copyright infringement.
Yeah,
they didn't see the potential of letting people get hooked on watching it,
yeah.
And then that would lead them to watch the show.
And that's not my favorite. Do you have a favorite digital short?
Laser Cats.
Oh well, okay.
I think him and Hader doing Laser Cats
yeah.
is so funny.
Well, I mean that's a continuing one though.
Yeah, I love those.
They're always trying to pitch the idea to Lorne.
Yeah, trying to pitch Laser Cats 3 or whatever. It's so funny.
My favorite of all time is I Threw It on the Ground. Do you know I Threw It on the Ground?
Oh yeah,
that's my favorite of all time. Happy birthday to the ground! I'm an adult. I love that.
My dad's not a phone. Duh.
Duh. Walking through the park with my, what does he say? With my so-called girlfriend.
And then he gets tased in the butt by Ryan Reynolds and
Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood, yeah.
And that's Jenny Slate, by the way. It was one of the first things she ever did on the show was she hands him the phone. It's your dad. My dad's not a phone. That's still my favorite. I swear that's the one that makes me laugh the hardest of all of them. I love most of the digital shorts. I think Lonely Island really changed a lot of what SNL was capable of. I mean, Lonely Island it was revolutionary what they brought to the table. And now they still do short films now, even though but it's clearly influenced by Lonely Island.
Well, yeah. Have you seen the Bash Brothers Experience?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So,
Jose Canseco.
By the way, I back Hot Rod.
Hot Rod's amazing.
I think Hot Rod is hilarious. I think it's absolutely hilarious, and I love Popstar. I love Popstar. I think both of those movies are great, and they both bombed.
Did you reinforce the ramp? No, we didn't have time. Cool.
Right. I remember seeing Popstar with my folks. We went to go see it, and when Seal gets attacked by gets attacked and ripped apart by wolves, I thought my dad was going to pass a stone. He was laughing so hard. It's one of the hardest times I've ever seen my dad laugh. Was when Seal was being attacked by a pack of wolves. Seal the singer, I should say. The real singer. The real Seal. I mean, that movie's loaded with cameos. Popstar.
How do you think I got these scars?
Yeah. It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And then when they made him DJ with that thing on his head. And that's a funny movie. So, all right. More memorable characters from the great... John Belushi. It's the 38th anniversary of his death, if you can believe it's been that long. Next mentioned here is his best Belushi roles. John Bluto Blutarski. Belushi's first big screen movie was a massive hit. Well, yeah, it wasn't his first big screen movie. It was his first, like, big role. But he was in a Jack Nicholson comedy western that Nicholson directed. Called Going South.
They both came out the same year. They both came out in 1978, right?
I think Going South was 77, but it was definitely before Animal House, because I remember he's only in it for a little bit, and I was so upset that he didn't have a bigger part. So
Going South was apparently released in October of 1978.
Oh,
and Animal House was July.
That was summer. Oh, okay. Yeah,
there you go.
I just thought Going South was first. It's weird that they would release October of 78 a movie that he's like barely in. Well, they probably wanted to take advantage of his popularity.
They probably shot it before Animal House.
Yeah.
And they were like...
It's a good movie, though, and that was the first movie Mary Steenburgen was in. Jack Nicholson discovered Mary Steenburgen. And Belushi plays like a Mexican deputy. He's got a big mustache. It's actually I haven't seen Going South in a long time, but I really liked that movie. I really liked it. But I thought that was first. Wow. Okay. Maybe I was disappointed because because Animal House had come out and here he is and he's only like five scenes in Going South. Widely considered one of his best movies of 1978, Animal House grossed over $1 million per week, which was a massive feat years ago, and inspired a nationwide college toga party fad. Much of the success was due to Belushi's masterful portrayal of Bluto, the seven-year senior, 7 years of college down the drain, with a 0.0. Mr. Bluto, and then he looks up, he's got the pencil sticking out of his nose. Mr. Blutowski, 0.0. He loved beer. Indeed, Universal Studios demanded that Belushi be signed for the role. There would be no movie otherwise. Director John Landis wanted Belushi to make the most of his fantastic facial expressions, so he cut to a number of Bluto lines requiring Belushi to use those famous eyebrows to great effect. How about the moment in the movie where he just dumps a jar of mustard on his chest? That part always kills me. He's just sitting there and he dumps a jar of mustard on his chest. He's in that stupid toga. There's no explanation, no dialogue, nothing. He just takes a jar of mustard and dumps it on his chest. That's one of the biggest laughs in the movie. I don't know.
See, you know what the weird thing is? My favorite character in that movie is D-Day.
Oh, he's great. Bruce McGill.
Yeah, Bruce McGill.
Yeah.
I love D-Day.
No, D-Day is fantastic. All the characters in that movie are great. Stork, played by the late, great Doug Kenny. Yeah. What the hell you want us to do, you moron? That's his only line.
What the hell are we supposed to do, you moron?
the writer of the movie. Oh, man. All right. We're celebrating the life of John Belushi, and we're doing some Animal House. We got some classic audio from Animal House that we're going to play, and we want to hear from you, talk or text, your favorite John Belushi movies or characters or memories, 312-981-7200 for talk and text right here on 720 WGN, and the show continues. Right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, continuing the show. We're live in the Skyline Studio here on a Thursday morning, and it's the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, if you can believe that. And so we're talking about and celebrating John Belushi and the work that he has done. Got some texts here that we'll get to in a minute, but we got a couple of pieces of audio from Animal House. This was the breakthrough movie that made John Belushi a superstar, and there are so many classic moments in it. This is the one that takes place in the cafeteria.
Ludo, hey, yeah, I think you know everybody here.
Wait, really? Can't you?
Oh, no, don't worry. Just keep your hands and feet away from his mouth.
Don't you have any respect for yourself?
This is absolutely gross. That boy is a P.I.G. pig.
See if you can guess what I am now. I'm a zit. Get it?
Oh, man. Okay, so Bluto's big moment, because Belushi doesn't have a lot of dialogue in the movie. It's mostly visual stuff that he does, like dumping a jar of mustard on his chest for no reason. But he does have, you know, the most inspiring speech in the movie when the Delta House, you know, Dean Wormer says the Delta House, they're expelled and they're closing down the Delta House. And besides, one of my other favorite moments, Tom, is when they're moving everything out of the Delta House. The movers are just taking everything away, and they drop the case of booze. And Belushi goes,
or when he polishes off a full Jack Daniels,
a fifth of Jack Daniels.
Jeez, oh!
Then he breaks the bottle and goes, "Thanks, I needed that."
Apparently, he could do that. He was capable of polishing off a handle of Jack Daniels.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's the problem.
Ooh. All right. So, but this is, you know, like after the house has been kicked off campus, they've been expelled. Belushi tries to get them inspired, and so this is Bluto's speech to his fellow members of the fraternity. I was going to say sorority, but that's not the case.
Well, what the hell is supposed to do, you moron?
War's over, man. Wormer dropped the big one.
What? Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
And it ain't over now. Because when the going gets tough... The tough get going. Who's with me? Let's go. Come on. What the f*** happened to the Delta I used to know? Where's the spirit? Where's the guts? Huh? This could be the greatest night of our lives. But you're gonna let it be the worst. Oh, we're afraid to go with you, Bluto. We might get in trouble. Well, just kiss my ass from now on! Not me! I'm not gonna take this! Wormer, he's a dead man! Marmalade, dead! Niedermeyer!
Ludo's right. Psychotic, but absolutely right. We gotta take these bastards. Now, we could fight them with conventional weapons. That could take years and cost millions of lives. No. No, in this case, I think we have to go all out. I think this situation absolutely requires a really futile and stupid gesture be done on somebody's part.
We're just the guys to do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it!
The best part of that, besides all of it, is when Matheson stands up and says, Bluto's right, and they cut to Bluto. And he's like, what, I'm right? What? He's got that look on his face. Forget it, he's rolling. Oh, John Belushi, man. He was just so great. So great. And he's so funny in that movie. We're talking about John Belushi, 38th anniversary of his passing is today. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We got some text here. 630 asked a young man from Belushi's native Albania, spoke little English, who was born well after Belushi's death, about Belushi. His face lit up and instantly knew who he was. So obviously Belushi is a legend in his ancestral Albania. That's true. That's absolutely true. He was proud of his heritage, too. 815 says, hi, Nick and Tom. My boyfriend went to high school with John Belushi. John was one grade older. My boyfriend didn't know him, and that's Carrie, and the school was in Wheaton, Illinois. Yeah, Wheaton, yes.
Wheaton?
Yeah, Wheaton. 815, Neighbors is an underrated movie with Belushi playing a straight-laced businessman against Dan Aykroyd's psychotic party animal from the director of Rocky. We've mentioned Neighbors. It's a very strange movie.
You know, it kind of reminds me of The World's End. With Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Oh, sure.
Doing a very similar thing.
Yeah.
Especially because Nick Frost is also a very rotund,
yeah,
big, funny guy that does a lot of wacky stuff, and Simon Pegg usually plays the foil, the kind of straight-laced dude.
Yeah.
They switch. It's always interesting when an actor does that.
Yeah. I love World's End.
It took me a while to really
come
around to it.
I love it. I think all three of the Cornette movies are great. The Cornetto movies, they're great. I have a really happy memory attached to The World's End. I saw The World's End the same day that I got this gig full time. Like it was, I walked in and they were making changes here at the station. Jimmy DeCastro took over, and after all these years of working on the weekends and not getting the full time overnight that I guess people were expecting me to get, I was just grateful to be on the air. I didn't care. But I got the gig. They were like, okay, man, you got the gig. You are now our overnight, full-time overnight dude. And then I walked down the street. I went to the River East, and I saw The World's End. So I always have a great memory attached to that. I think Hot Fuzz is the best of the three.
Oh, it undoubtedly is.
I mean, and I have a great emotional attachment to Shaun of the Dead. You know, it was the first of those movies, and it has zombies in it. And I love World's End. I think it's great. But for me, I think Hot Fuzz is the best.
Why did you want to become a policeman? Police officer. Policeman is sexist. Why did you want to become a policeman officer?
A great big bushy beard. You know who's great in that movie, besides everybody? Timothy Dalton.
Oh, yeah.
Timothy Dalton is fantastic in that movie.
I'm slashing prices.
It's such a funny movie.
Yeah.
And all the cameos at the beginning of the movie. Your Steve Coogan's, mm-hmm, Martin Freeman's.
Peter Jackson.
Bill Nye.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson as Santa.
Who stabs him through the hand.
Yeah.
He's Father Christmas.
And Cate Blanchett as the girlfriend with the surgical mask on. Yeah. You don't even know it's Cate Blanchett.
No.
I saw that. Did I ever tell you? I saw Hot Fuzz 3 times in 2 days. They had the press screening at 2:00. They had another press screening at 4:00. I went to both of them. I loved it so much. I stayed for the 4:00. And then the next day, I interviewed Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and Edgar Wright. It was a junket, so we were in a hotel room, and I got like 20 minutes out of it. And it was great. I met him, got pictures with him, and all that cool stuff, and they couldn't have been cooler. And then that night, there was another press screening at the River East, which they were going to introduce. So I saw it three times in 2 days.
There you go.
The only movie that I've ever done that with, besides?
Phantasm.
No.
No.
Oh, Phantasm goes beyond. I'm talking like opening weekend.
Opening weekend. Mad Max.
Yes.
Yeah.
3 times in 2 days. Fury Road. I've only seen that movie a couple of times, though. A couple of times a day. 630 was in college when he died. Heard about it on a Saturday evening, and I was planning to go to a frat party. There was a rumor that everyone was going to wear black togas to pay homage to him. Aww. Talking about John Belushi. 708 says John Belushi was athletic. Oh, yeah, he was. I wasn't saying he wasn't. He wasn't built like an athletic guy, but he could move.
It's called inertia.
Yeah. He played football at Wheaton Central. And he really did those flips in the Blues Brothers. Yes, he did. He did those flips in the Blues Brothers when James Brown sang. That's another thing that Chris Farley had in common with Belushi. He was unbelievably athletic for a big guy, and he was much bigger than Belushi. Belushi was big, but I mean Chris Farley was huge.
Well, it's like you got those guys on the O line. You know, they're 300 pounds, but they're built like a brick, you know what house.
Yeah, but you know what? In both of them, because they were both, you know, Belushi and Farley were both very athletic. That added to them doing incredible physical comedy. Like both of them, the talent that they had for physical comedy was boundless. And they again, like Belushi and Farley have in common, they would do anything. They would do anything for a laugh, physical, whatever it took. And they would throw themselves, sometimes literally throw themselves into a bit or a role. So we're talking about John Belushi. John Belushi passed away 38 years ago on this date, which, again, is mind-boggling to me that it was that long ago, 38 years ago. Working at McDonald's, getting a phone call from my friend Scott, and that's how I heard about it. If you were around, how did you hear about it? Where were you when you heard that John Belushi passed away? So we're celebrating his talent and his life on this, the anniversary of his death. Nick DiGilio, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we head over to Bradley Place and get some WGN-TV morning news. And then at 5 o'clock, Bob Surratt, the legend, has your morning drive. 312-981-7200, talk or text. We're talking about John Belushi. Today is the 38th anniversary of John Belushi's death, and so we're remembering some of his more memorable roles, his movies and his TV stuff. And just what a force of nature and a comedy god he was. 312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Nick. Good
morning.
How you doing?
Good morning. All right.
My introduction to John Belushi was through the National Lampoon Radio Hour.
Yeah.
And I just remember the Guru Craig Baker bit was just hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. The National Lampoon Radio Hour, that's basically where he got seen, you know.
Exactly.
And of course, we've all talked about the Joe Cocker impression. That was the thing that kind of...
Oh, yeah. And I just remember one time Walter Matthau was hosting.
I remember this.
The skit where Belushi just kept trying to throw him off by twirling his antenna different...
Right. And the thing is that, you know, it's really interesting, Mike. I don't know, you probably know this already, but
he hated
the Killer Bee sketches.
I think everybody probably hated them.
And he was purposely trying to screw up the sketch by doing the antenna thing, except he was killing. He was getting great laughs with it.
Right.
It's just, but he hated the bee bit. He was something. Right, where were you when you found out he died?
you know, I really don't remember, Nick. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
I'm 67 years old. I've got a lot going on.
All right, Mike. Thanks for the call, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, take care. Yeah, National Lampoon Radio Hour. So, other memorable characters. Ron DeKline. Now, this is a good one. This is kind of an obscure character that they include here at Legacy.com, you know, in talking about his best roles. This was from The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash, one of the earliest mockumentaries, and it was an inspiration for the cult classic This Is Spinal Tap. All You Need Is Cash had its share of cult status as well, beloved for its eerily right-on send-up of the Beatles. Belushi played Ron DeKline, the most feared promoter in the world, based on real-life Alan Klein. Fearsome in his own right, he's often blamed for the Beatles' breakup. Ron DeKline strides through his office, dark sunglasses and a white turtleneck, striking desperate fear in the hearts of his subordinates before breaking a chair over the heads of two lackeys. It's one of Belushi's funniest lines in the film. And he earnestly asserts, "I want to protect you from people like me." Tom, you familiar with The Ruddles?
I am not, actually.
Oh, man.
That's the one.
Eric Idle's in it.
Yeah.
It's called The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash. It's a mockumentary about a takeoff on the Beatles. And I remember it preempted Saturday Night Live when it first premiered, and I was angry until I started watching it. And then I was like, oh, man, you got to see it, man. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash. And the album is good.
Yeah. You know what I always confuse it with? Because I've heard of the movie, but I've never seen it. I always confuse it with Meet the Feebles.
Oh, it's completely different. That's not even in the, they're not even in the same.
Yeah. Isn't Meet the Feebles a takeoff on the Muppets, like the band?
Yeah. But no, this The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash. It's great. And it's got a million cameos in it. And Belushi's hilarious. Belushi is hilarious in it. And you should look up The Ruddles. And look at how visually how they nail everything that has to do with the Beatles. And the music itself is brilliant. The music is brilliant.
Yeah, Eric Idle is Paul, it looks like, when they're doing the rooftop concert.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Well, they all have different, I mean, and by the way, I think the first appearance of Nigel Tufnel is in that. If I'm not mistaken, because Christopher Guest is a part of it as well. But no, if you've not seen The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash. It's great. It's brilliant all the way through. And Belushi's hilarious in it. Absolutely hilarious. All right. Here is Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. What's going on?
Hey.
Hey, I was talking to Tom, who's a great producer of your show. I kind of lost my thought for a second. Hold on.
Were you going to talk about the book Wired?
Yes, thank you, Wired. You know what they said about Belushi with everything he'd done with all these stars and how he went on Saturday Night Live and would do a gram before he did The Samurai on live TV?
Yeah.
Was absolutely amazing, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he did have some... He had a very high tolerance for drugs and booze. A very high tolerance. And he had addiction issues. And although much of Wired is a bunch of BS, but the core of what happened to Belushi is true. But a lot of what Bob Woodward wrote about in Wired was very exploitive and not good. But I mean, he did lead a wild life, and you know, obviously that's what led to his death. So, Chris, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200. All right, a couple more memorable characters. Ernie Suchak, that's the character he plays in Continental Divide. It's based on Mike Royko. And, again, we've mentioned Continental Divide a few times this morning as being a really nice departure from what he normally did. Earl Keese, his final film, Neighbors, was probably even a bigger departure than Continental Divide. The dark comedy star Dan Aykroyd is the loud, wacky guy, and John Belushi as the low-key, serious neighbor. Roger Ebert loved it, particularly the casting choices. Brilliant casting, especially since they divided the roles somewhat against expectations. Whatever you expect or wanted from John Belushi, it can't be denied that he played the straight role well, giving us a glimpse of the range he could have achieved if he didn't die 4 months after this movie's release. And again, Neighbors is a weird movie, man. They mentioned Peter Venkman. Never got to play the role. Peter Venkman, of course, is the character that Bill Murray played in Ghostbusters. And Aykroyd and Ramis wrote the part of Peter Venkman. They wrote it specifically for John Belushi. And we've mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show. Clearly, John Belushi and Bill Murray have completely different styles of comedy. So they had to rewrite the thing so it would fit Bill Murray's personality more. So, and then finally, Joliet Jake Blues from the Blues Brothers says, "We had to save the best for last. John Belushi's career soared to the dizziest heights with the 1980 release of the Blues Brothers. The first movie based on a recurring SNL skit, the Blues Brothers was a wacky homage to the blues, Chicago, and ridiculously destructive car chase scenes. It gave Belushi a chance to act with one of the stars he parodied, Ray Charles, along with other music legends like Aretha Franklin, James Brown, John Lee Hooker, and Cab Calloway. In addition to bringing music of these performers to a new generation, Belushi as Joliet Jake taught us that sunglasses are acceptable nightwear. Chicago's Daily Plaza is where they got the Picasso." Yeah. "And you can get away with almost anything if you claim that you're on a mission from God." Blues Brothers, was that your first exposure to Belushi?
No, it was more
Animal House.
More Animal House.
Yes. Okay.
Even though I didn't get Animal House when I first saw it. I was like, "Okay, this is weird," but I didn't really get it's until I ironically went to college. I was like,
"Yeah.
Oh, now I get it."
Yeah.
Kind of. But the Blues Brothers was on in our house, you know.
Yeah.
It was on TV a lot.
Well, you can't be from this city and not have seen the Blues Brothers. I don't even them.
Unless you're my mom.
I don't even
She's never seen the Blues
Brothers. Never seen the Blues Brothers.
From the Northwest Side, never seen the Blues Brothers.
That's weird. I'm one of the only people not a big fan of that movie, but I've seen it countless times, even though I don't like it that much. I love the music, though. I will say that. All right. John Belushi, I can't believe it's been 38 years. He passed away on this date, and we miss him, and he is a comic legend, but he left behind a lot of really great stuff that we could all watch. So, all right. Nick DiGiulio's show continues here. We got the WGN Morning News coming up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate it. Tomorrow, Friday, all the regular Friday features, plus two of our favorite regular guests. We've got Herb Weisbaum talking about consumer problems, and Jeff Tuckman will be in to talk about DVDs and stuff like that. So stay tuned for the WGN Morning News.